Good morning and welcome, everyone. Today is Thursday, August 24th, 2017. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for our administrative workshop. I think I said it's 9 o'clock. If I didn't, I meant to. Item number one is legal counsel. Item A is order number 2017-042 in the matter of confirming the sheriff's property sale of August 8, 2017, accepting the sheriff's return of sale, accepting the sheriff's certificates of sale, authorizing distribution of proceeds of sale, and execution of quitclaim deeds and execution of land sale contracts and quitclaim deeds. Feels like we did some of this yesterday, but at the same time, we've got some stuff to still finalize with this process. So go ahead and take it away.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Mike Watson from property.
Mike Watson. We had our most recent sale on August the 8th, Sheriff's excess property sale, and out of 24 properties, we sold greater than 50%. We sold 13 of those properties, some of which had been to auction previously. A number of these properties were bid up from the minimum bid, so it was a very successful auction. In total, four of the properties were sold through our new process of land sales contracts, whereby we financed based upon the sale price between 36 months and 60 months. So those payments have actually already started coming in. The remaining properties were sold for cash, and all of the money and proceeds have been collected. In total, when all is said and done, the total sale value is just shy of $300,000. And the distribution on those, the vast majority of the properties, the funds will go to parks and recreation. One parcel was sold that will go to forestry, and that happens to be one of the contract sales. So after the return of expenses to property management, in that case, only $220 at this point went to forestry, but over the term of the sale, there'll be monthly payments approximately $800 to $900 per month that will go into the forestry department. Some of the proceeds went to Public Works. There was a property on New Hope Road that Public Works purchased in order for the realignment of New Hope Road a number of years ago. So $13,500 of that money goes to the Public Works Department. And that was a cash sale. So that will go immediately to them. All in all, it was a very successful auction. We have 11 properties left over that did not sell, for which we will need to talk about at some point in time and decide whether how we want to treat those. Because they did go to auction and did not sell, the county does have the opportunity to authorize me to negotiate with private parties for those sales, or they can roll those back over into the next auction, which I hope to have in May of next year.
We're going to reconvene our kind of ad hoc property committee to kind of evaluate, go through that list of remaining properties and say, this one makes sense to just kick to the next one. This one should be open for negotiation based on its development capabilities. And then that one that's 60 acres, really nicely potentially developable, we're going to potentially recommend to the board that we look at retaining like a representative in the real estate market to kind of, that's not a chump change. It's had a minimum bid of $400,000. And I think with the right marketing to a developer that might exceed our local contacts, we could get that one off the books. So.
The estimated value of that property is almost $500,000. And to a developer, it's probably worth every penny of that. Because yeah. It's got the potential for numerous five-acre home sites in an area that's only 5.3 miles from where we sit. So it's close in. It's a beautiful piece of property.
There's just a typographical element on page 7, number 2. I can get with you afterwards if necessary.
Okay.
It's delineated 220. There's a decimal point there where I think there needs to be a comma and an extra zero, or am I...
I see that. It's supposed to be $220. We'll make corrections.
$220 or $220,000?
$220.
Okay. That's zeros are important.
They are.
And then the other one is Ryan has not put in for his time on some of these that needed his attention. There was a $5,600 charge from property reserve to do some remediation and stuff, but that isn't capturing his overhead. I want that part of the total, and frankly, I think we can work that out under the 10% that you're approving, appropriating, and then we should subtract some of those smaller dollar administrative, ancillary things out of that. Your budget is actually doing quite well this year, which I'm pretty happy. I'm proud about the fact I was hesitant to hire a property manager for years because I was worried, how are we going to pay for this thing? So I think this system is working out in a way that Parks is benefiting, Forestry is benefiting, the county's benefiting by reducing its liability, and we're also having a property manager being able to do other property types of projects in the county. So,
To continue on that, actually our property at 3344 Camp Joy Road incurred approximately $21,000 worth of repair and cleanup in order to get it ready to sell. The $5,600 is going to repay part of that, and then approximately 14 and a half payments later, it was a contract sale, all those monies from the first 14 months will go to repay that $21,000, and then the balance reverts to Parks.
Okay. We'll work on that. So these are contracts.
So the only ones coming to us, even though the whole list is here, are the ones that actually did the payment plans, the contracts.
Yeah, I think we have proof.
We received all cash on all but four of the properties.
Correct. So that's why I'm saying there's only four delineated here on the agenda.
These are all the contract ones, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
I could never draw those things. I don't know what they're called, but I'm not good at those, you know.
We'll move whatever's appropriate forward in the appropriate way for next weekly business session. I wouldn't get mired down. Okay, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thank you. We have item number 2A, which is Community Development Building Safety, IGA, regarding school tax. I think legal was going to be here as well.
Good morning.
So Pat was going to go get it. Yeah, would you mind? I think she just maybe didn't have much to add, but she needs to be in the room for this discussion. So go ahead and lead us off, if you would.
I'm Mark Stevenson, building official. So the new IGA that is proposed, they're proposing it went from $1 a square foot based on habitable space within a single-family dwelling to, I believe they're asking for $1.23. a square foot, and 61 cents a square foot for commercial structures. Currently it's 50 cents. They're offering the department, instead of a 1% collection fee that they allow us, to bump it up to 4%. Not really sure why, but I just wanted to put my 2 cents in it that I'm not really thrilled about collecting somebody else's money based on building permits.
Come on up, Pat.
We have enough issues with our own fees that people question our fees and such, that now we're collecting this other chunk of money for the school district. Makes
Can
it look
you tell
like
us how
it's
much last year was collected? I believe the number was $340,000.
I believe it was $240,000.
Zeros are important.
Yeah.
And ones.
In the right spot.
Basically, they paid us about $2,500 to collect it. Didn't exactly cover our expenses, but now they're offering 4%. But again, this goes on at all building departments across the state, and that is there's all these extra fees that we collect, and so it always comes back to, you're charging us a fortune for that building permit. And we're going to nail our fees.
We are charging them.
Right.
So this has been an issue for me since I got elected the first time. And I have been waiting for this IGA to kind of come to fruition to where we could have that opportunity to discuss with the school district. That was one of the topics that I reached out to the superintendent a couple of weeks ago that I wanted to discuss. Also the parking issue at the bus barns that they have there on Green Gate. And for some reason we didn't connect, tried to follow up, haven't yet. I'll just be pretty honest and blunt from a liaison perspective to this program for a number of years. I'm not interested in doing it anymore. It's an optional IGA that we've inherited from previous boards, previous administrations of building officials, and it makes us look really bad. I'll give the example of I've gotten several calls from commercial building developers. So I'm just going to use Crosscraft as the one. And they did a 30,000-foot expansion to their warehouse facility 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so $30,000 square feet translates to $15,000 in additional costs that they didn't anticipate. When they come to the building official and he says, well, your permits, everything's good to go, I need to check for $15,000. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you've got to be kidding me. Same thing happened to Rough and Ready when they were looking at doing some of their expansions and retooling at their program. It hits them across the, you know what $15,000 means to a developer who's trying to employ people. I just don't think it shouldn't be up to us whether that's a politically astute thing or a policy thing that's appropriate. It's not a fee we have control over. They're recommending a change in that.
How are they able to collect a tax that's not voted on by the people and change the rate without it?
It's a state approved ORS optional element for the county to collect on their behalf through the building department, and that's what gives them the authority, is state statute.
So if we opt out of our optional option to collect, who collects the fee?
Either the school district does it or they elect not to. Now, it goes to a worthy cause. What I've mm-hmm. talked to the superintendents, not this current one, in the past, they use it for usually facilities improvements. So $250,000 isn't chump change to put a new roof or, you know, whatever. But that we are getting, it isn't the school district that gets a bad name for this, you know. And we don't want to run their name down when they're writing us a $15,000, $30,000 check. It's us who gets the bad rap. It's this guy right here. And he already, like he said, you know, we all receive calls about, what are you talking about, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't need any additional, and that he can't defend, well, I don't actually know where that money goes, or this isn't a reflection of cost of service. That's the challenge for me, is we're faced with collecting and defending, and I don't care if you give us 10% of the revenue. It's those elements that we don't have, shouldn't be our responsibility.
Also chimes right in when people say you're not a business-friendly community, you're not a growth-friendly community when you go in to get your building permits and this lump sum comes falls into your lap.
Right.
However, it's going to be there either way, so...
Maybe. I don't know how the school district... I don't know if there is a school district that collects it outside of the building department anywhere in the state. How would you? We'll send them the records. They can ask for them, and I think they're public records. So we could say mm-hmm. we've had three housing, you know, residential housing developments or whatever this month. Go get them, Tiger. How are they going to? What we have is on our checklist, you don't get your building permit until you pay all of your appropriate fees and taxes. They don't have that. If we say we're not doing that anymore and here's your building permit, mm-hmm. you paid all the fees that are appropriate for us based on our state requirements, our fee schedules. The challenge for me is they're looking at increasing it, and they didn't come to you and say, well, how are you with the 1%? How are you with the 4%? How are you with collecting 63 cents or $1.23? Mm-hmm. There's no nexus here for us to be.
We're not mandated to collect that for them.
No. All of my understanding,
it's
an optional deal.
Governmental agreement with the city also.
And currently there's one that the city signed, so it's an intergovernmental agreement with the city, the county, and the school districts. And we have one for Three Rivers and the city of GP.
Okay, so...
Both districts.
Okay.
And currently the city have sent over the one that they sign, and they are, you know, I believe with the expectation of the county will sign, since there's county signature.
I've wanted to do this for 6.5 years, that we should get out of this business. I don't have, nobody's ever been able to present a reason other than school infrastructure is really important, but I don't get to manage how they allocate all of their other funds. Why is it? I don't know. It just, it feels really challenging to me when people are trying to employ people, or somebody's building, you know, a 2,000 square foot home, and they get an additional $2,000 bill for something from us that I don't know that I can always defend. It's a bad position for him to be in, to try to defend.
$2,400 now.
Right.
What we can provide is, we can provide them a copy of the permit. You know, we can photocopy those and get them that information.
Sure.
So they have a record of the new construction that's going on.
That's my position.
Looks like you have a 90-day termination on both agreements.
I think it would be worth, as our, my recommendation would have our liaison to the department follow up with the school district and see, you know, maybe with legal or something like that, about what that 90-day clause would look like for them. What would that execution look like? Obviously, I don't like more fees. I supported cutting SDCs in my career, but it's one of those things that I also know Three River School District is not financially
flush.
Exactly. And not necessarily when the future of our economy is directly related to the youth in our community, and doing something that would impact that, you know, maybe a building's not fit to have kids now they have to cram into another building or something like that. I want to make sure that we're aware of the ramifications of our decision before we go down a path that is not convenient, it is not fun, but if it's making a difference in the school district and it's the means of doing it, before we...
One of the challenges that I have is, like, so District 7 put on a bond measure a couple of years ago to do roof replacement and infrastructure improvements. And it's like, Josephine County will never do a maintenance bond on our facilities. We capture a maintenance element and our depreciation of our square footage of how we allocate. We're covering that over time. You know, it's like owning a boat, 10%. Is what you need to expect to pay every new infrastructure. Sure, you don't have the capacity to raise revenue off of your uses, your programs. That's totally a bondable issue. So that, for me, is a managerial decision. Either, and I'm just saying for District 7, not Three Rivers. I don't know how they do their fee allocation and depreciation collection on their infrastructure, but that's something you have to put into the bottom line on a daily basis. Your maintenance element of how you're going to pay for that.
If we're not going to do that function for them, should we have a different path they could follow, not through us?
I think it might be worth looking at the House bill that actually put this law into effect, because just a really rough looking at it right now, it seems to say that it's just, it can only be collected by the local government. So I mean,
there may not be an alternative.
I don't know. It's worth looking at it. It's in here.
To a degree, that's an issue, but at the same time, I struggle with it, you know. I understand that it's optional. It's at the discretion of the county to do it, hence the IGA that we probably don't have. I think your recommendation is probably very valid and sound reasoning, that we should reach out to them and, you know, do the diligence that we did expect. It didn't necessarily happen. Appreciate you bringing this forward to the board. It's a timely issue.
Commissioner, that's a copy of the ORSs and such. That's the original IGA that we had.
I'll line something up next week, and I would expect that we
can
revisit this
that.
On Thursday. So the ladies will set something up for the superintendent and city. I would imagine you need to jump over there, talk to them.
Yeah.
I'll hopefully do both of those before next Thursday, so we can get this issue addressed real soon. But then following Thursday, I'm barring any unforeseen changes, and I hope that I'm not convinced otherwise, I'm going to endorse the idea of signing a letter of intent to not renew the IGA or to, this is the 90-day notice of termination.
Do you need our office to take a look at that legislation from?
I'll take a look at it real quick, but okay. I need to be, you know, well up to speed on it. It was a number of years ago that I really got into this when people were building a lot and calling a lot, and it was really bad for Robert Rice, his predecessor, and real challenging, you know, the big checks coming in for reasons we were trying to defend, but really, I don't know.
So. I know that we never took the higher, it's 4% is the cap, right? And we never had taken that.
We just recently started doing the 1% collections. Is that? Because
my understanding is the 1% has always been collected.
Always been collected.
And I guess they are offering in the new IGA the max 4%.
Okay.
Yes. In the city, when I haven't seen the one for the others, I mean in the Three Rivers, I haven't seen the one for this school district 7.
We also collect it for school district 7.
We have two IGAs.
Okay, but that's probably a smaller deal, because it would only be in the new urban growth boundary where we would have, or county areas. There are county areas where District 7 applies, so it's
this,
probably
the
really
district
small.
Boundaries are odd.
Odd, odd.
Yeah.
Okay, that probably has a smaller deal. So do I need to, it's not the city I need to reach out to, it would be the District 7.
Probably both Three Rivers School District, District 7, as well as the city, because our intergovernmental agreements are all connected.
Okay.
With the city as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll play some calls. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Item number 2B is transit contract for personal services between Josephine County and Fair Piers Corporation for Josephine County's first mile, last mile T&C solutions.
Morning.
Mr. Chancy, how are you, sir?
Good. How are you?
Good.
This is a follow-up to a grant agreement that we had for first mile, last mile, which is basically how to get people to and from the bus when there's no service, and working and looking at the Transportation Network Corporation's model, which is Uber, Lyft, that kind of thing. Is there a way to incorporate that type of service strategy into our service, or how do we deal with a TNC when they come into town, if they ever get here? So this is just kind of getting ahead of the game. So this is just
TNC again.
Transportation Network Companies. So this is a grant agreement. I'm sorry, this is an agreement with a consultant to look at this sort of operational model, see if it can be applicable here, or if it is, what would it look like? So it could turn into things such as maybe we operate our own sort of TNC type of operation, or how do we incorporate a private company that comes in into our operation as well. So this is kind of an issue that's being struggled with currently in larger urban areas. It hasn't hit us yet, but Uber actually has went into the city of Medford and talked to them, so at some point it is coming. So it's just kind of getting ahead of the game and seeing how we can incorporate our services with theirs, if that's the answer, or do we do it ourselves. So that's what this is looking at. So it is, the work will be done. I think the agreement says June. The consultant said April 2018. It's a little under $100,000. There is about 11,000, almost 11,500, that's the local match requirement for the ODOT funds. That's pretty much it. I do think it's timely that this is happening now, considering there is this influx of transit money that's going to be coming in 2018. So I'm kind of excited to get into this to see if there's a more cost-effective way that we can expand our services, especially since you're only paying for it when it is on demand. So it's not like you're running a bus all day long. You're only running service when somebody's actually requesting it. So I'm not sure how it's going to look or how this is going to turn out, but I'm pretty excited about it.
I have some folks that just moved here from Vegas and immediately found work, and their car broke down. And so they've been relying on our public transportation to get around. And we're shocked to hear the buses stop at 6 and not on Saturdays. And they're like, how do people get to work around here? And it was neat to see that they immediately just went to using our system and figured it out immediately, and no big deal because they come from a place where it's everywhere. But I appreciate there's going to be dollars coming in to expand, but you know my thoughts on expanding time.
I think I'm on the same page. And if you can't have transit as a long-term solution if you are not operating at least 6 days a week, or at least expanded hours, because it's not. I mean, that's a significant portion of the week that there is no transportation option available for anybody. So this might be one of those solutions as well. Maybe this is just a Saturday-Sunday solution. Maybe this is an evening solution. So I won't know until we kind of look into it.
And this is just for the study, right?
It's just for the study. Just for the study. At some point, they're supposed to give a recommendation on a service-type model, and we can take that and do whatever we wish to do with it, possibly go after additional state funding to put in some sort of model, but at least we'll have a study in place, so at least we can react when this kind of comes to fruition.
So there's no public provided service outside of those hours and on Saturday and Sunday. There is private sector, you know, options. There are friends. There are ways to do it. I lived in D.C. for 6 years, you know, or I took public transportation almost every day. But then there are times, you know, that you have to call a cab or an Uber or Lyft, and we don't have Uber and Lyft, but we do have cab companies. People have friends. She knows them, and she drives a low-cost vehicle as far as per mile.
I've loaned my car out to people to take trips.
It's not ideal, but, you know, if you're saving a bunch of money by not having a car payment and insurance, every once in a while I think you can afford to. Hopefully you can afford to do that private sector alternative. But I think, you know, rounding out our system as best we can is really, really important as well. Sounds good to me. Any objections? You're the liaison. Move forward.
And I can be at the Wednesday meeting. Somebody's supposed to be bringing a bus for me to look at, but other than that, I'm available.
Okay, great.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
I kind of feel like this is more of a consent calendar item than an administrative.
I don't think so.
Okay. Item number 2C is Local Public Safety Coordinating Council, LPSIC. Parks is after that. This amendment to an extension of this contract is fairly routine, in my opinion. Sarah, can you do a brief as the presenter for the LPSIC group? Is probably, I think it's a team effort between Nate and Mr. Goodwin.
I'm Melissa McGrubby, our LPSIC coordinator.
Who's presenting on that?
I was going to start, and then Nate was going to continue.
Okay, I'm going to ask for your patience for just a second while Sarah comes up, presents the Parks Amendment with the approval of the board, so she can get back to. The other issue that I want to present to the board is the Walker Road access. I got another email last night, as you probably did, at about 11 o'clock from some people in that area. And so if we address that one first, I'm going to recommend that we give the authority to the Parks Director to work out any kind of means that we need to take measures to reduce people outside the hours that walk. The Cathedral Hills is open. Walker Road is the only county-maintained access point to the Cathedral Hills BLM-controlled park program. We do have another section that we own, but I don't think we facilitate access through that. It's just the Walker Road. So at the Chinook Park, there is a local person that used to be in charge of opening and closing the gate. This is before your time.
Okay.
I don't know that we do that anymore. Is it open all time?
There's no gate at Chinook that I know of.
Okay. So it's open all the time?
Yes.
There was a gate for a while. And we had a light installed, which you, I think, removed, and some other things. Whatever we can do to try to mitigate the challenges that this neighborhood is. I've reached out to the sheriff. He's agreed that drive-thrus, but I don't know if those are between regular business hours, which is not the problem time. It's the dusk and dawn and outside of probably normal sheriff patrol hours. So until he ramps up in an ability to do those outside normal business hours type of patrols, I think we're going to have to take some measures. I don't know what exactly they look like. I just want the board to be aware of this, maybe delegate the director to take take appropriate measures. It's not a high trafficked area as far as legitimate uses during the day. I've used it a half a dozen times. It's not even in my mind as far as when I want to go to Cathedral Hills. And I use, there's times when I go there a couple times a week.
Where do most people access it?
Clover Lawn and SB Road. Those are the two main main access points.
BLM manages almost all
there's
of the portions.
There's restroom facilities, paved parking, all of that at those other entrance points. So eventually the long-term plan is for Mr. Watson to facilitate a transfer of that property to the BLM to make it one owner, and they can maintain all of it.
That was probably the next question I was going to ask, is why don't we just get rid of it?
That's the goal.
I think we're trying to use it as a puzzle piece to transfer quite a few properties, so just simply offloading it now might hurt us in the long run with trying to facilitate quite a few other properties. On a positive note, places like Chinook, we have had the trail cam occasionally up, and around 1 a.m. we occasionally see OSP stopping in and shining a light and doing checks. So
nice.
Chinook has been a lot quieter. My concern with always putting a gate up, of course, is who closes it, who opens it, how do we make sure that's done, fielding complaints. But I agree, if it's somewhere like Walker Road where we just don't see legitimate use, who cares if it gets closed for an entire month? Perhaps then they would find somewhere else to go in the off hours and you could get back into a normal routine with usage.
That could be, but I think the Walker Road, and I'm not disputing that that's something we look into or actually do, but the Walker Road neighborhood has some challenging residences.
Yes.
So I think if it's open one day, they're going to be there.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the solution is, but I think we may have to take Commissioner DeYoung's point and address the problem and work on the solution over time so that the residences aren't negatively impacted. And if it's not as though we're restricting all access to Cathedral Hills. There's a lot of other opportunities to get in there and get out. And so that's probably what we might look at. But I'm going to look to you for proposed solutions. I just need the board to endorse whatever she needs to do in a timely fashion to facilitate a safe area in that neighborhood. If you concur, that's what I'm
thinking. The purpose of the Walker Road was so that people on that side of the mountain could have access to Cathedral Hill. But we're not. Are we seeing much traffic in that? I mean, do we go there and the parking lot's full?
No.
Never. I've been there a dozen times. I use that access point, and there's rarely anybody else there. If I've ever seen anybody, there's one other car.
Yeah. I might have seen a vehicle parked there with nobody around during the day that looked like they were actually using the trail maybe two times in my almost 2 years now.
So we're not going to impact anybody that were for intended use. We're just going to cut off people that we don't want there anyway.
The locals are walking from their house anyway. It's not like they're driving to the parking lot. So
that's true.
Don't see that you're having a huge impact.
I've seen pictures of syringes and the whole gamut of stuff that's challenging in that area. So it's not a...
There's other access points that are more appropriate. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we don't need to belabor the point. If you guys are on the point, I don't want to keep Melissa. So item number
two. Do you need
two,
a taser or...
What makes you think she doesn't have one?
Yeah.
item 2D is Parks Amendment for Date Extension for Personal Service Contract between Josephine County Parks and Auslan Group for White Horse Park Master Plan Engineering. Just want to look at extending that deadline to...
October 31st is the proposed date by Auslan in order to finish the 100% plans without rushing it. And so it's really just a simple date push and nothing further at this time.
Did the full board sign that?
It looks like they do want for full board.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So without objection, I'd entertain a motion to approve amendment number 2 to contract for personal services between Josephine County and the Auslan Group.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
It's just an extension, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Aye.
Motion carries 3-0. Thanks, Sarah.
Yes, now the only other thing is I was supposed to be on the department updates last week, and that ended up getting pushed off just because of the full schedule. I wasn't sure if you want me to stick around for a department update this week or if you want them to reschedule that. I was not on the agenda this week.
What works for your schedule best?
I can stay today. I can run over to finance and then come back over here.
That sounds great. Sorry, I didn't know that. You could have
That's
done it
all right.
In one fall swoop.
I thought I would let you know.
My bad. That's great.
Perfect.
We'll see you in a little bit.
Thank you, Commissioners.
So, Melissa, what's your last name now?
McRoby Toll.
Okay, come on up.
Thank you for
McRoby Toll.
Part of it.
Yeah. wanted to respect the fact that some significant things have happened in your life since the last time we saw you.
Thank you. Yeah, actually, I have notes and I had to write in my hyphenated last name because I forgot about it.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. That's excellent.
Thank you very much.
And we have Director Nate Kyran here.
Morning.
I'm going to move. I think that's probably the best thing to do down there. You guys are going to show something over my...
So good morning, commissioners. I know most of you. My name is Melissa McRobey-Toll. I'm the Public Safety Council Coordinator for Josephine and Douglas Counties. The full name of the council is Local Public Safety Coordinating Council, LPSC for short. We're here, Nate and I, to request a letter of support from the BCC for the Justice Reinvestment Grant Expenditure Plan that was approved by LPSC earlier this month for the 2017-19 biennium. A while back, Commissioner Hare had asked me to come talk about my role as LPSC coordinator, so I'm happy to answer questions about that later on if you're interested. Just briefly, I was hired in January by the Association of Oregon Counties, one of six LPSC coordinators statewide, to represent a total of 15 counties to help make their LPSCs more efficient. A lot of those counties had never had professional LPSC staff before, so this is a person dedicated to helping move along the policies that are decided on by the LPSC. I work 2 days a week in Douglas County and 3 days in Josephine County. I have a lot of different duties and various things I've been working on. Right now, I've been writing the Josephine County's grant application for justice reinvestment funding for 2017-19, JRI for short. For those unfamiliar with JRI, it was created in 2013 in response to the ballooning prison population. The aim is to reduce the prison population by directing state resources locally for programs to promote recovery and rehabilitation. This is the third biennium of JRI. During the last biennium, 2015-17, statewide, $38.7 million was allocated for justice reinvestment. Josephine County received $1.1 million. We used it for a 10-bed drug treatment pod at the jail known as Secure Treatment, a prosecutor position in the district attorney's office, part-time mental health worker in the jail, a drug court coordinator, and transitional housing and reentry services. 10% of each biennium is required to go toward victim services, so we've been splitting that 10% between Women's Crisis Support Team and Illinois Valley Safe House Alliance. This biennium, the legislators allocated a little bit more, $40.1 million toward JRI, and we'll be receiving $1.2 million of that funding. We talked about it as a LPSC, and we decided to fund many of the same programs as the last biennium with a few changes. The drug court coordinator position is now paid for by the courts, and we're adding a new expenditure, which is only $10,000 for the 2 years, but we're going to be implementing court reminders to help reduce the failure to appear rate in courts. So it's kind of like an automated phone call, like a dentist appointment reminder to remind people, hey, you have a court appearance tomorrow. We're requesting this letter of support from the Board of Commissioners, which is required for the application. And the due date is August 31st, so if it's possible to get that soonish, that would be great.
You have a draft of some sort. I think that's a really great suggestion. I get a reminder to go to my dentist appointment.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
The way it was working, we're piggybacking off of Multnomah County's contract, which went through a competitive RFP process, and there's a bunch of Oregon counties that have started to contract through the Multnomah contract, which saves money. In Yamhill County, their FTA rate dropped from 25% to 4% after they implemented these reminders. So we're hoping that we'll get some good results and it'll actually be a money saver. I don't have a hard copy with me. I did email in the draft letter.
That's great.
Okay. And then I will introduce Nate Gowrieran, who you know, and he will tell you a little bit more about the JRI expenditures that LPSC approved.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, Board, for hearing us today. We're requesting, as Melissa was saying, a letter of support for LPSC, or from the Board of County Commissioners to LPSC to apply for these funds. I wanted to just kind of give a brief of what we're applying for, specifically for the upcoming biennium. We have a very significant opportunity to reduce the amount of prison that we use. Later on in this presentation, I'll show you what some of the outcomes that we have within the last few years have been in terms of reduction of prison usage. This is all the programs that we're applying for in terms of getting funds. The secure treatment bed is something that Melissa had gone over earlier in the presentation, but we're hoping to continue those that program in this upcoming biennium. We've seen significant results specifically to people that enter into secure treatment that have never really completed or have gone through outpatient treatment and been compliant. We've seen some significant results there, so we're going to continue with that program. Prosecution, this is more of a general prosecution for a deputy district attorney, and that is in the tune of $200,000 for the biennium. Victim services will be allocated at a rate of 30% to the Ivy Safe House, and 70% of that fund of $119,000 will go to Women's Crisis Support Team. Transitional housing reduced a little bit from last time, from 105 to 100, but some explanation on that particular program is that we had some carryover funds of roughly $20,000 from last biennium. We voted as a LIPSIC with Commissioner Morgan's support as well to use those carryover funds to help fund Welcome Home Oregon again in the next biennium with that $20,000+ from carryover. The basic needs PO is a new program. We just wrote the narrative on that, and we'll be sending that along with the application to the Criminal Justice Commission. That is basically for people that are transient, that are high risk, that aren't stable, that we want to get them stabilized and then eventually into treatment and self-sufficient. The random control tests, that is something that the CJC is coordinating, and we're prepared to give that money back to the state to do statewide random control tests. By the way, this last biennium, we used that random control test with Union County, Yamhill County, and us, and we received $100,000, which was pass-through money that we ended up contracting with another researcher to conduct that study on our downward departure cases. The CBT in the jail, that is new funding that's going to come to community corrections, at least planning on, for a half-time FTE counselor. We're already facilitating the groups in secure treatment, but now we're going to get actual funding from the justice reinvestment to do those things. And then court reminders is what Melissa had already gone through.
CBT for
cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Commissioner. Sorry about that. Lots of acronyms in our field, mm-hmm. I'm sure that you're not aware of. The legislature this time gave us a opportunity to have a competitive grant process, not just for the regular allocation rate for the justice reinvestment, but they expanded another opportunity for us to apply for a pot of money for $7 million statewide. From what I've been told from the Criminal Justice Commission, it is geared towards specifically reducing prison population. So we have strategically placed in our application downward departure to kind of showcase what we do here in Josephine County. Downward departure sanctions for the jail, long-term sanctions. What happens with a lot of these folks is that we'll offer them a downward departure. In other words, they deserve prison, but the DA's office is offering for them to be supervised locally, not go to prison, give them a chance in here in the community locally. And when they have a technical violation, oftentimes they end up going to prison, like a dirty UA or not reporting once or twice to the probation department, or you know, things of that nature. So what we're trying to do is build in some long-term sanctioning options before we send them to prison. In other words, 30 days, maybe 60 days, could be 90 days in our local jail. But we need the funding first before we do that. And that's what the ask is for $570,000. Again, this is a competitive application process, this particular table. It's not guaranteed funds.
You've applied for that, but you don't have yet.
Not yet. This.
Can they give you part of that? If you apply for
could.
$570,000 and they give you, mm-hmm. no, we'll give you $360,000?
They yes. could. Yeah. This funding here on this table, and I went back a slide just now, this is guaranteed funding that we will receive. That's the, yes, Commissioner.
I didn't mean to interrupt you when you're done with that thought before you leave the screen.
Of course. This is money that's guaranteed. We're going to receive this. This money, this next screen, this is not guaranteed. This is just what Lipsick is going to apply for and hopefully receive. So I'll go back to that screen, Commissioner. There you go.
Yesterday we approved for 4 new positions in your department. Is this basic needs PO, was that one of those positions?
So the 4 positions that we requested to be approved and move forward was from the grant and aid, which is a separate pot of money. We got an increase in
that funding.
This is an addition to.
And then the next one that's situation would be even yet another PO.
Another one. Yes, okay. Yes, ma'am. Yep.
Did the questions that came up about victim services breakdown get answered?
Yes, Illinois Valley Safe House Alliance. They were just wondering, because we did the 70-30 split, they were arguing there's a great need in the Illinois Valley for shelter because some of their women who are victims who need shelter can't get into the Grants Pass shelter. But we had already made the decision that Lipsick continued that 70-30 split that they decided on in 2015 this time. So since they are both members, we have the 2 victim services members now, I advise them to bring it up at a future meeting as a topic for discussion on the need for more shelter services.
So the one other question I have before you go off this page, I know in previous GRI we funded housing specifically, and this one says maintenance of housing. With a basic needs PO dealing with transient issues, how do we address the housing side of things? Is that something that there's other resources for right now, or is that still a struggle?
You know, it's still a struggle just with the resource piece of it. We only have 26 beds currently for transitional housing that we have, you know, control over within community corrections. So it's going to be the collaboration with the PO that's assigned to the basic needs and any of the resources that we have with the mission, with Welcome Home Oregon. But the crux of the matter is identifying, assessing, making sure that we're giving the people that need it the resources that they are in need of. So that's really the aim of the basic needs PO, is to get them self-sufficient, to get them stabilized so that we can get them into treatment. But you're right, the resources available are difficult.
One of the reasons I asked is I know at one point there was a question of whether or not the old radio service communications house mm-hmm. would be available for you guys. Mm-hmm. And I had asked that question of our facilities manager last month, and he said it's still potentially there, so I didn't know if that's something that you guys are still looking at or not.
We have not closed the door, so to speak, on that potential. So,
if it ever comes to us, I really strongly support that, unless there's another need for the house.
Oh, I was tracking on something else for a second. I don't know what you're talking about. Well, we'll have to talk.
Okay, darn it.
The one thing that I see on there is courts, and that's a state function. And we're allocating, you know, $10,000 to have people show up to their court date. Is that an appropriate use of funds that are distributed to the local level to help facilitate things that your office is doing to reduce the prison population, or is that a state responsibility that they should be implementing on their own accord?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Commissioner.
It's only $10,000, and it really, you know, it's probably a really good program, but mm-hmm. maybe if it's such a good program, the court's spending all this time and resources on setting up structures and having meetings associated with people who should show up, and then they don't. That doesn't actually cost the county that much, other than your office is showing up or the sheriff's mm-hmm. office is showing up for somebody who doesn't show up for a trial. But the courts is really the person who's the entity that's putting all that time, energy, and money in the bank for the buck at $10,000 seems a no-brainer.
So I'll give you some background on that. The court got cut in their funding for the upcoming biennium. We also had that conversation. Okay. You know, why are we funding a state court that's already getting funding? So they got cut. The other thing that we see value in with the court reminders is that it's kind of a trickle-down effect.
Yeah.
So if the court gets jammed up with not being able to see people for months on end, it affects locally us, community corrections, it affects the sheriff's department, it affects prosecution
sure.
in general. So what we're thinking is, if we implement something like this, if we have roughly a 30% failure to appear rate, and we can get that down to, you know, single digits failure to appear rate, then everybody's going to benefit, and it'll be just a much more efficient system. So,
well, is it the courts what starts out the whole system? A person, when they have an offense, they go to court first before they're...
But law enforcement starts it when they make the arrest of the individual committing the crime
right.
before it gets to court. Then it goes
okay,
to
so you're talking the failure to appear rate is between arrest and first court appearance.
Or any court appearance.
Or any court
but right. you can have somebody who maybe was in line, because one of the tasks the state has given the counties is to reduce prison population. The justice reinvestment, the idea is to try to keep people local. We could do it cheaper. You have somebody who is misses a court date, has a tendency to stay in the criminal behavior as they're going through, and they may be racking up additional crimes, and where they may have been somebody we were saying this would be a good candidate to keep out of prison, now they've missed so many court dates, they're heading to prison. And so reminding them to appear, oh gosh, I got court tomorrow, maybe I'm not going to do this behavior, and it keeps these guys from having to go out and find people in the sheriff's office. One other thing I'd like to remind us, though, is we just had a mapping of the criminal justice system, and one of the recommendations of that was that we as a LPSC not be looking at things in a siloed manner, that we be looking holistically as a system and goals that we need as a system to accomplish the end means. And the courts are a LPSC member, so looking at the holistic system, having a reminder to appear in court saves the time of the overtime of a police officer that's showing up to testify, the sheriff's deputy, the parole and probation officer, all of them come to testify on those court appearances. It costs us about $1,100 a person when they fail to appear each time. And remember, you had a friend that had 13 resets and something like that, so it does save our community money with a $10,000 investment, that the return on investment, I believe, would be much greater. The other thing is, in our last justice reinvestment, the courts received a drug court administrator. Mm-hmm. And so that was quite a substantial expense in the last justice reinvestment application we approved that the courts are not getting in this application.
Yeah, so a little follow-up to that. It freed up money for the basic needs PO and community corrections funding because the drug court coordinator, as the commissioner was alluding to, is now funded through CJC grant that we applied for a couple of months ago. So
I wasn't questioning the validity of it. It seems like a no-brainer. I mean, getting people to show up to their dentist appointments that I was talking about, it's really important to keep the whole system moving. It's just whether or not is it appropriate for it. But it's not that much money. The principle is one I don't want to stray from. There are things that the courts are responsible for, and we already provide about $250,000 worth of local benefit to housing them right here in this facility for a year at no cost to the state or anything. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's just what I want to keep for future reference.
Yes, sir.
When I'm not here, that's pretty important.
Okay, so this, going back to this slide for the competitive application of the $7 million that's out there, we're going to apply for, if you go scroll down to the very last, it's $1,048,776. The downward departure sanctions, as I was talking about, the long-term sanctions that we need available, the prosecution of the downward departures, we're giving a one FTE in this application process. We're working collaboratively with the DA's office to, first of all, give them information in the form of what's called a defendant assessment report, or a DAR. It's much more comprehensive than the PSC. It's more comprehensive than the LSCMI, which is an evidence-based risk assessment tool. And then we make a recommendation on whether or not to keep these people within the community. We're not advocating near as much for people that have person-to-person crimes. These are more drug-related, non-person violent crimes, non-violent crimes. So these are the folks that we're targeting on this particular program. And then, of course, the downward supervision of that, we're going to allocate one FTE for PO supervision of all the downward departures, so there's a consistent message and supervision strategy for the people that have prison pending over their head. And then the mental health court coordinator, I was approached by the courts last month regarding an ask for a half-time mental health court coordinator. Currently, they don't have one right now. Obviously, there is a need for mental health services within our jurisdiction, so this is one way to make that efficient and get the resources for mental health services to the folks that need it. So that's the other ask.
I was just going to add that right now the coordinator duties are being done by Judge Wilkie's assistant, Andrea, so she's kind of doing that. He calls it as a volunteer. She's doing it in addition to all of her other duties, so there is a need for it.
Are there any match funds associated? I could see options of Southern Oregon being able to say that it would be helpful for them and their clients to be, you know, a partner in that effort. Mm-hmm.
They provide about 15 staff to the mental health court team.
Wow.
That they just pay for, that is not funded through us in any way.
Okay, it's huge. I think this is a great list, if I could just say so really quickly. I mean, trying to put that at the top of the list, saving the state prison system, you know, that top application. And I'm sure that this is just a brief summary of what you're delineating in your application, but, you know, always looking at it through the lens, and I'm sure you do, of what the intent of the justice reinvestment dollars was to save the state money by providing an alternative service to prison locally at a lower cost. And I just feel one of the questions I had is whether or not, so we're really good at this. You guys do an incredible job. Relatively speaking, to either the region or rest of the state, does that put us in an advantage or a disadvantage? Because they say, well, but for more dollars in, say, Douglas or Jackson County, they could be doing what Josephine County is doing, which is probably not necessarily true because we're getting an allocation based on either population or what have you. We could do really good with this based on our record of doing really well with what you gave us the last time. Mm-hmm. Or does that hurt us because we're doing really well and they need try to round out the program and have the benefit in other places? Do you guys have a read on that?
Yeah, Nate has some actual graphs to show you guys, but as LIPSA coordinator for both Josephine and Douglas, I'm a lot more concerned about Douglas County's application because their prison usage has gone up since they began receiving the justice reinvestment money.
Right.
And it's not yet a competitive process, but it's possible that the next biennium it will be.
Okay.
So if they don't change it, then they could lose their justice reinvestment dollars because the state legislators want to know that if they're giving money, then it's having the intended effect.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, I would say, a benefit for Josephine County that we're doing well.
Okay. So on the next slide, I'm really excited about this, and this might help answer your question, Commissioner Hare, is that the first pot of money out of the $40 million, it's a given to everybody across the state. And it's based off of the grant and aid percentages, the allocations to community corrections agencies. For our jurisdiction, it's 2.99% that we receive out of the $40 million. Lots of effort was involved with that, and I'll spare you the details at this time. But
we testified, this is one that I testified on, the renewal of these funds.
Mm-hmm. The second part of our application, we're going to showcase this, because this tells you we're the fifth best in the state in terms of saving prison beds compared to what we have done in the last 3 years. So if you go up to the far top right corner, that shows you the one-year measure, and we're still in the green. We're still better than our baseline. And if you go down to the bottom screen, we're top five in the entire state. And we're the 11th largest county. And to be top five, I mean, that's saying something about our programs. And so It benefits us when we can show these numbers in a competitive process for the $7 million ask. The next biennium, we may not be in the green because we may reach maximum program benefit that we've already established with all the programs that we have.
So the baseline gets reestablished?
The baseline gets reestablished because we have implemented all these programs. And so
they're working.
So if you continue with that three-year snapshot and average it, guess what? Our baseline goes down, and then it's going to be harder to achieve the green, in other words. So some of the, just talking with some of the other leaders around the state looking at these different graphs, some of the other jurisdictions have not fully implemented justice reinvestment programs the way they were intended. So we may see some competition in the next biennium. But for right now, we're looking good.
You guys are implementing things, and they could be borrowing best practices from the counties that are doing really well. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, ideally, we want the whole state to succeed in this because it saves everybody money.
Right.
And it just seems odd. Jackson County usually has a tendency to be pretty stellar in a lot of different arenas, and it's probably just because you're not there anymore, Mr. Gowron. I'm just going out on a limb. We're happy to have you here, though.
Thank you. Any questions on justice reinvestment? I would just encourage the board to consider signing the letter that I think Melissa would have a hand in drafting on a support for justice reinvestment applications.
And we do have it in our packet, the recommended letter.
Okay.
And it's a simple paragraph saying that we've reviewed the plan and we offer support of the proposal.
Sure. Anything we can do to bump it up to where it says what? Yeah, it says what it needs to say, but then really saying that this is integral to the success of the program.
I can fill it out a little bit.
Yeah, that would be really.
Yeah.
I read it, I think, when it came in. That's a lot of other stuff.
It doesn't really say that we understand what the benefits of.
Yeah.
The and for me
and
especially.
That might be saying too much, but she probably does.
Well, and we have an opportunity to highlight in the extra $7 million ask, mm-hmm. how in Josephine County our services are such and cut with the district attorney's office and all that we've gone through, that we still are committed to being a part of the solution to keeping the prison population down. Mm-hmm. And we understand as the board how important that process is and are trying to find solutions to that process. And I mean, just kind of...
At an opportune time, we just got assigned an additional judge. There was only two mm-hmm. counties in the state who got that.
After 36 years.
Right. Yeah. And we had the extra facility. So, you know, passing the levy is a big deal. I think putting those things, delineating that the community is behind this effort, okay. wouldn't it be great if the state was an additional partner to just move this forward? We certainly have the need here. I think we've got a lot of challenges that need every possible program to lean into them to address. We were just talking about Walker Road. It's all drug related, mm-hmm. you know, that challenge. And if we could just try to get those people who are probably at a gettable point, maybe, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I can fill it out and then send it back in a couple hours.
Sure.
Okay.
We're around.
Great.
Happy to do it. So thank you very much.
I have a question before you go. It's kind of off topic. Is when the governor decriminalized meth, heroin, and cocaine, is she going to go back to prison? The prison system say, get all these people that are in here for that and kick them out?
It's not retroactive.
Okay.
The bill that she had signed is not retroactive. But there is some.
Would that be something to consider by a parole board, for instance, that she can reduce, governor can reduce prison population? You know,
the charges she reduced to misdemeanor are not ones that would have sent somebody to prison in the first place. They're possession level charges.
Okay.
So those folks wouldn't be in our prison system unless they were manufacturing or delivering drugs. So possession in and of itself isn't a prison bound crime.
Okay.
And it's always, we had somebody I supervised for that had 20 years parole, true parole, on driving suspended charges from the 80s, which wouldn't have been anything but a violation today. I mean, they change, but it's what you were the day of your conviction and what the law was that day. And if it changes the next day, it doesn't matter. You were convicted under the current laws the day before. Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. I have a whole other... I'll stay off my soapbox on that one.
An off-the-record conversation.
You will find that we're on similar planes with his soapbox.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Really appreciate it. We'll get you that signed letter later today.
Yeah, I'll send it in.
And just for information, the three of us are meeting at 2:30?
2:30.
About the survey the state is requiring us to do, so we'll have that done today.
Cool. I leave at 3 o'clock. So
traditionally, it has been done by the LIPSC liaison with
just the letter.
The letter portion.
That's all that I'm worried about.
Okay.
Signing it before 3 o'clock. I endorse it. Maybe we can do my electronic signature. I'm in favor.
Okay.
So if I'm not around, we'll get it done. Anything else on that? We're going to move forward to item number 3. We have juvenile justice, actually. Mr. Goodwin's been patient. Sorry, Sarah.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Well, after went very well, thank
good,
you.
Good.
After a meeting with our liaison last week, we decided that an update on where we are with the expansion of services would be appropriate. So here we are. So I have a fun little handout. The top page is a before org chart, and the bottom page is an after, which is where we will be when we're finished with this project.
Do you have a spreadsheet of what it looked like prior to 2012? I'm just thinking for future reference, and I'm not sure if I'm, in my mind, characterizing it necessarily, and I'm not contradicting what you say, mm-hmm. an expansion, but almost a reinstitution of our previous program.
Correct.
It
would basically be this org chart without prevention.
Okay. Oh, nice. That's a great positive addition.
Right. And so that's what I would say. I mean, with very small tweaks here or there,
sure.
That's where we were in 2012.
Cool.
So you're right. We're basically bringing back services that were lost with the addition of the prevention programs. So, but as you can see, the real net effect, about 11 FTE to almost 39 FTE department-wide is, it's a bit of a heavy lift right now, but we are, I think we're doing a really good job. So I set out with an extremely ambitious goal after the levy passed of an open date in January sometime, not necessarily January 1, but January.
Sure.
And so we've been kind of moving backwards on that timeline since then to try to make that happen. Basically because standard thought was it would take at least a year or so, and I really think we'll beat that all to pieces. But I'll just give you an update of where we are, what we've done so far, mm-hmm. and where I think we'll be just in a couple of months. So
can we, just before we leave the org chart, any questions on this? I have one. I think when we're talking about instituting a levy-funded program, that if you have in your org chart some sort of a potential delineation between levy-funded positions mm-hmm. and the prevention ones might be a pretty good distinction, like a color-coordinated, this is what the levy's paying for, this is what the levy's not paying for, because we don't want to ever get the potential for construing that there's something outside of what the intent was.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Take
right.
it a further step, including that, for instance, we have the detention that will be funded by the levy.
Mm-hmm.
We have the shelter that will be funded by our trust fund. Mm-hmm. And so highlighting...
Yeah, that could be...
Because of the approval right. of the levy, we're able to open the detention. Because the funding is there, we are able to build on it, and using non-tax dollars, our general fund and tax collected mm-hmm. dollars, to fund the shelter. And so you'd almost have, and then this is provided by state funding, or
right.
you know, kind of delineate and
right.
say, look at what we've been able to expand this much because you guys provided this much.
Totally.
And we can certainly do that from an org chart perspective. I will say from a budgetary perspective, with Mr. O'Hare and Chris's help in finance. It is right down to even quarter of FTEs, like from an admin point of
Absolutely.
View. So, for instance, part of my FTE, once we're rolling with detention and shelter services, will be devoted to that.
Yeah.
Our deputy director, about half of his, he'll supervise all of the management team, that sort of thing. So we have that right down to the point whatever in FTE in the budget currently. So
great.
Which is sort of a moving target at this point, which is part of what I'll talk about.
Okay.
Next, if there's no more questions on that. So we have our management team is in place. We had a one kind of surprise was an internal candidate with a lot of experience in our previous facility that stepped up and applied for our shelter coordinator position, which is very heavy on the administrative level, contracts, dealing with the state, things like that. We weren't expecting that, so it turned out we had both basically internal promotions. The staff over our program supervisor for detention and shelter coordinator both came internally, and they are in place now doing a great deal of work on this project as well as their former jobs, because we're in the process of hiring, backfilling for them. So that's the, and then when we restructured a little bit, basically the chain of command will be deputy director over the two program supervisors, and then the supervisors over the line staff and the programming. A number of things that are in progress right now. Department of Education, there are very specific ORSs around juvenile detention education programs, criteria that you have to meet, steps that you have to take, IGAs with the school district, so on and so forth. We're well on our way on that. District 7 has been a great partner there. We've had several meetings with them, and we're basically at the build the IGA stage there. Department of Ed is good to go with funding for the program, which basically provides a teacher for the program to come in to detention. And then on the other side is an alternative school that will be administered through District 7. That's for our shelter program. We'll provide in-house schooling for that population because they are so, when your average length of stay is 30, 45, 60 days, it's very difficult to send kids to local schools because they might be there for 3 weeks and then they move and they go to another one. So basically the model is if you're in the shelter program, we provide education there. So
do they work on like the packet basis? I mean, so they're getting credits?
We're going to go to some online software where they can do just that. And before that was very difficult because just the nature of, so if the kid came from a school district over here, sometimes we couldn't get their information out of the mire of the district until they were almost ready to be released. And so now, if they are were enrolled anywhere and have credits, we can plug them right into that through this online software, and they can pick right up where they left off. So that will actually be a much better product than we had before. And they'll be able to actually get credit in the program. It was very difficult for us to issue credits under the old system.
So one partnership that I don't see, because obviously they don't work for us, but mental health. And I know oftentimes mental health issues manifest at an older stage, but it's been a need in our community enough that Kairos has existed for however long.
Mm-hmm.
And so how, I mean, you've got a partnership with the school district going, you have partnership with treatment going, but where does mental health come into play when it comes to the youth?
I have a meeting tomorrow with Shelley, the deputy over at Options. I forget what her title is, chief operating officer or whatever, to talk about a contract, a really basic contract that has at least a presence of about 2 hours a day, where a QMHP or actually a license level therapist can come in and basically do assessments if needed, refer to treatment if needed,
for both populations, detention and shelter. The detention population is probably even more important because a lot of the kids in the shelter program already have DHS caseworkers, and they're more embedded into the system oftentimes than our detention kids. And so we'll be talking about that. And then what we had before was 24-hour crisis response through options anyway. So that will be part of the contract that we put together. But this time, it's really important to me this time to have that presence in the facility 5 days a week, even if it's for 2 hours a day. Mm-hmm. It's what we'll shoot for, 20 hours a week, or 10 hours a week, just to have that. And so that's the goal. The other contract is nursing. We're looking at, and this could be a question for the board. Last time around, we contracted for about 9 or 10 hours a week of nursing, which is required for both programs when you're operating, with JOCO Mental Public Health. This time, we're looking at maybe going with primary health or all care. So I've got some calls and I'm going to have some meetings really with whoever can provide the service. But our feeling is, especially with the current transition and everything with public health, maybe we go outside of that to look for a nursing contract.
Well, and it may be that you actually get a contract with both.
Mm-hmm.
Both have an interest in public health. Both have an interest in addressing our youth before they get into the adult system for the sake of reducing future cost.
Mm-hmm.
And so it may be that there's an opportunity there. That, for instance, Community Corrections has a contract with both for alcohol drug treatment billing services. So the opportunity that you could potentially, maybe they partner and they provide a person and they pay 50-50.
Mm-hmm. So on the shelter side, we are neck deep in applications and paperwork for two specific areas. One is licensing, so you need a certificate from the state that says that you meet licensing criteria for the shelter part of the program. So the team that's in place right now is working, like I said, every hour that they have outside of what they're doing in juvenile justice, their regular jobs, they're spending on that. The other one is BRS, Behavioral Rehabilitative Services, which is the federal standard that you need to use in order to be able to bill for your shelter beds, and that's where some significant income will come in to offset these programs. And so those are two very huge application packets that are exhaustive and require a lot of oftentimes policy revision. There's a lot they're pretty heavy lift, but we're well on our way for those. On the contracting side, after this legislature finally wrapped up, we did get confirmation that finally those BRS rates were going up for the first time in, I think, ever significantly. So I have met with both the Oregon Youth Authority in Salem and Department of Human Services about the idea of contracting for some of our beds. And budget-wise, what we anticipated, I was very hesitant to put a hard number in there when we put our budget together because we didn't really know. We hadn't had those meetings yet. And we're foreseeing around $470,000 in revenue based on the new rates and the number of beds that we think we can contract with the state. So the number that we plugged in originally was 260, so we're looking at about 200,000 more than we originally planned, which is very good.
Well, even another thing to highlight, I mean, literally, our folks passed a levy for this amount, and because of it, these contracts came in that were
right.
able to provide more services to our community
right.
because we had this base level provided, and I think that's something we should highlight at some point.
Well, we were anticipating
it really is.
That, but we really didn't know the time frame about the legislative session and the appropriation
yeah.
of the money and how much was going to be available, what the rates were.
There right.
was a lot of unknowns, and so I think when we really formed the budget, we were anticipating, frankly, we were putting more money than we could actually afford into the juvenile detention element, to be mm-hmm. perfectly honest. We were overextending ourselves.
Right.
But understanding that it would average out over 5 years, that you're going to do that in the beginning, and mm-hmm. you're not going to ramp up tomorrow, and there's going to be time delays. And so, you know, Arthur and I having these conversations before a lot of stuff, stressing me about this is what we don't know, and this is what it could potentially cost. Mm-hmm. Can we actually afford that for how long and at what level? And thank goodness this came in, because
right.
that's probably, in my mind, the margin that we had that was outside of this
right.
comfortable amount. So that's perfect. That's best case scenario. Awesome.
Right. And really, those numbers are based on, so from, now this, I guess, is my philosophy, the when you are obligated to provide a certain number of beds, so we'll be capped at 12 in the shelter program. I personally don't feel like it is. We rarely had more than 4 or 5 local kids, not DHS kids, in our program before. So my feeling is I don't want to go more than half of those beds.
Right.
If we're capped at 12, I don't want to obligate more than 6. So that's what this number is based on.
Cool.
What happened many years ago is, as budgets started to squeeze down, we added more. We got so dependent
right.
on money from the state for beds that it was becoming hard to place a local kid, and we can't have that.
No.
When the public passes a levy, my sure. obligation is to, the when person. A kid in this county needs that service, they go in.
Right.
And everything else is...
Well, the really nice thing about the structure that we've had in the last couple of years is the fact that there is regional capacity. There's an experience there that you're not starting from scratch.
Right.
You could try to figure out, you know, a Douglas County, Josephine County relationship that would be ongoing, to where there's, even if it's just for a couple of days or what have you,
right.
it's not totally outside the wheelhouse. We've done that for a couple of years. No big deal. We can do it, and if need be. So
right.
I like living at the... working at the height of capacity, because you're fully utilizing your facility, and you don't build a facility that's 30, 40, 50% above capacity what you actually need, because that's costing you money every day mm-hmm. that you're not using it. So that's great.
Have right. the project started yet for the upgrades on the building?
That's my next point. So, okay.
I'm only saying that Commissioner Harris stepped out of the room for a minute, and since he is the facilities liaison, I think it'd be beneficial for him to hear that conversation.
Okay.
Just so you know, we have a press release we're working on for an item, and it's been emailed to us while we were sitting here as far as the draft, and I noticed Commissioner Hare working on edits on it, so I believe that's what he just took to our support staff to make some edits. So
I apologize.
It's okay. I was just explaining that we had a press release that was emailed to us that we're working on.
I'm working on it right now and getting you guys the...
So after...
the final draft.
I asked him to wait because we were getting into a facilities talk, so I wanted you to be a part of this.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. So this will tie into that. But where we are right now, we have... And almost every job description, well, everyone so far has required a lot of... You've seen, the board has seen a lot of them, I'm sure, because we've had to modify them in such a way they needed board action to approve. But so with the management team in place and postings for the current folks that are moving up, we are expecting to post our lead positions, day swing and graveyard lead, shift leads, maybe this week.
Nice.
Education staff in the maybe week or two after that, and then we'd like to post line staff positions with the idea that we could be in the facility training, which is, we've identified at least 5 weeks of training for these staff that are, I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah,
every time we turn around, we think of, oh yes, we need a half a day to train on this, and we need 2 days to train on that. And so we're already up to 5 weeks. And so with a middle of January, you know, hopefully as an open date, we would need to be in the building training by December, by the 1st of December, which puts us back. We're really coming up upon that. Now, I'd met with Ryan from
It's not bomb anymore.
Yeah, you have to pay a dollar if you use the word bomb.
Facility services.
We haven't agreed upon that, but okay. It sure sounds good.
Right. And so one very important thing to me into the program is a full electronics upgrade on our detention side. Just about every facility in the state has moved up to this type of system, and ours, when they put it in, was obsolete before they put it in. We had real problems with it. So basically what it does is it puts your intercom system, your door lock system, your magnetic door lock system, and your camera system all on one flat touchscreen panel. And it's really, really user-friendly, it's efficient, and it's the industry standard.
Sure.
Nowadays, the jail, as I understand, is going through that right now, or just did it.
To a degree.
So the hope was to get that contractor, if they could squeeze it in, to do ours before we're open for business. It would be a real mess.
Oh,
we would actually probably have to move kids out again.
Train on the new system.
Right. We would actually probably have to move kids out again for a week or two. To Jackson or Douglas,
you would think
to
it would
make
take
that
a week
happen.
Or two.
Yeah,
it didn't work out that way in the jail. Best case scenario, it was arduous.
Right.
It went longer than we wanted it to, and that was a year long project. I wanted to be perfectly honest. So I think we're going to have to try to work on that diligently. I think that was brought to me a week ago or two, and I didn't feel Ryan brought it to me. And told me that this is what you were looking to try to do, and I said that's a decision for the board to say.
Right.
At what degree do we, step back and say we're going to have 5 years of this program?
Right.
Maybe forever.
Right.
You've got to figure out a way. You've got to do. This is the time to do the infrastructure. Paint the walls.
Well,
you can't
it
be
is.
Doing that around
right.
kids. Hey, don't touch that.
Right.
Nah, that's not going to work out.
And so those things, and I can tell you, being a one unit, small unit. It's not near the scope of the jail. So,
right. And they're working around inmates that were in place
right.
where
so detention
this
centers,
would be
faster.
Yeah.
Detention centers that I know that have done this upgrade have done it in it's
awesome.
Weeks, not months.
Nice.
And so that's the big part there. Flooring throughout, the flooring is really, the 5 years being closed, it was not kind to it.
No.
Paint completely in the interior
and
walls.
Exterior.
There's sheetrock. There's issues in the restrooms. I mean, so we did the walkthroughs and looked at all of these things. And the last time I met with Ryan, he basically said that bids were in and they were looking at scheduling.
Great.
And so my only concern and what I voiced to him was, if we're posting, interviewing, recruiting, testing, doing all of this. And we have our 20-some people ready to go. The timing is very delicate, is what I'm saying. And
it is.
We wouldn't want to have these folks on and
sitting around
ready to be trained and not have. So hopefully there's some contractors in there very soon that we get started. I don't think the scope of the work will take, when you're talking about interior, exterior paint, flooring, those aren't major construction jobs.
I think I'm going to sit down with Ryan next week.
With today's climate, that's the problem. The contractors are all going. There's plenty of major construction jobs they can do.
Right.
Piecework, they're not interested in anymore. If I get a plumber to do anything at your house, it's very struggling.
Right.
Electricians and whatnot.
Right, and a few things that we're able to now actually make. When they opened the building before, it was over budget. They shoestringed a lot of things, and they some things just never were put together correctly, to be honest with you. And so we're going to try to fix some inefficiencies. Small things like we never had. I mean, you wash sheets, blankets, that kind of thing every single night, and we had like homeowner washers and dryers.
Same thing with refrigerators.
Yes.
Stuff like
so
that.
we're going to go to a walk-in.
Cool.
The original building had a walk-in freezer and refrigerator in there, and they didn't go with that. They went with 6 freezers on this side and 6 refrigerators on that side. And
ridiculous.
Really, really ridiculous. So that's all part of the bids and the
Great.
And the facility upgrade.
I'll touch base with Ryan on Monday.
Okay.
And we'll sit down. And I think one of the things that I would like to see, is contingency, is that you're planning your training stuff that doesn't involve the facility that's administrative in nature. It's some other Marie Hill location or what have you in the first, just try to do your orientation stuff
right.
not needing to be in there, and
right.
hopefully you get to be in there. But if
yes.
you don't, we'll provide you 157. Or
right,
or
yes,
or
and those 2 to 3 weeks we can do that, and then
okay.
you have two,
and then you're
two
gonna
or so
need to be
that they
training
need to be
on
in
the
that building, you know, learning the systems and,
okay.
and that sort of thing. And so that's just a...
Always best to build in contingency.
Exactly, but...
The challenge is Ryan's getting more and more on his plate, and he has
right.
zero depth right now. He needs to hire a deputy to run the day-to-day maintenance stuff, so he's not mm-hmm. doing... He can be freed up to do the larger project stuff, and that's a challenge that we need to overcome yesterday in his program, so he can get that, do those kinds of things and be on deck, because he's also facilitating a $130,000 contract for courtroom improvements in the evenings with
right.
the courts and
right.
the judges.
Right.
That doesn't sound like, I don't think we have a more challenging potential project ever in the future of our county than that one.
That's a tough
that was
problem.
My hesitancy to sign up for that. But we're all moving forward. Got that one. So we'll get this one in the queue, and we'll get it done.
Great.
You also have, I guess there's an item in our packet. About LADPC.
Yes. Did you get a copy of the letter?
Which it's in here. So pages 71 and 72.
Yes, which was a previous... Do you want to come up, Sean? A previous letter to the previous board, actually. Goes back maybe 2 years?
Yeah,
Sean?
October, I think.
October 16th.
Yeah.
Well, and it's timely that you are bringing this one up. So... Essentially, the gist of this is that we've had a local approved 3% tax on cannabis revenues.
Oh, right.
And previously, the board had said that, or there had been a request from LADPC for them to be the advisors on how that monies are spent. It was very specific in the language of the ballot that it where it go. And I know that Lipsick has requested, to... have the board's previous approval for the 17% from the state go through Lipsick.
Mm-hmm.
LADBC is asking for the 3% local tax to go through them. And so this was something that when they approached me, I asked that they bring it back before this board, because this board had not actually addressed either issue. And so it was kind of previous boards before anything was in place, before any money. Matter of fact, nothing has been given from the state on the 17%. But we have been collecting locally on the 3%, and then what is done with those monies. So that's just my intro. I don't know what you guys have to offer to
well,
say.
I think that was all what I would have said. And so the previous board, we brought it before, and they said, yeah, it's a great idea, but there were no actions taken on it. So right now I believe that that tax, the 3% tax, is sitting in the general fund, and we need some kind of action to be able to make the recommendations so it's not sitting in the general fund. Is that correct, Arthur?
It's sitting in the general fund, yes.
And
it's about 40,000.
Arthur's probably fine with that.
Quarters.
Are you fine with that?
I'm happy, yes.
Which I guess, so I guess
the first quarterly installment was 12,000.
Yeah.
We're at second. We're going into third quarter, so you sort
right.
of, so it's probably ticking up.
So it's ticking up, and we have about 40,000 so far for the first 2 quarters.
So I guess the ask would be that the information be provided to LADPC maybe at the first year even,
mm-hmm.
once you have 4 quarters and we get an idea of kind of what will be coming in.
What you're looking at.
And then...
Well, and LADPC really does look at the community and assess the community and where the greatest needs are. So based on the language of that that tax, public health, public safety.
It says public health, education, and treatment related to marijuana and marijuana products. It
right.
doesn't actually say public safety on this portion.
Oh, okay.
It's, so revenue from this tax shall be used for public health, education, and treatment related to marijuana and marijuana products.
Our ballot measure?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I didn't bring the file, but...
Let me see if I can look up the ballot measure, because I thought it had public safety
in it
as well.
I insisted that it have that.
Yeah.
So the letter doesn't include that portion. So
the letter does or doesn't?
It does not,
okay.
So let me find the actual language from...
The initial two members of the board were not receptive to having law enforcement. I said I wouldn't endorse it for forward without that element in it is discretionary. The board can pick from all of those mm-hmm. sections. We're not mandated to give it to any one of those specifically.
Right.
So I just needed to have it on the table because I said, what if it brings in $10 million? Which it probably won't. But you're going to dedicate all of that to those, that very narrowly focused element. This is your opportunity to just cast a broad net, and then you can refine it after time. But you can't go any more broad than when you institute it. That was my argument, and they eventually said that was okay.
Do you remember when that was?
We referred it the November before. It was on the November ballot, I believe.
Yeah,
2015. The one you guys were on.
Yeah, so,
and
you know, so making it that comprehensive that really was a great idea, mm-hmm. because some of the ideas that we've been having discussions with the school district around is school resource officers, or, you know, what is our greatest need right now when you're talking about marijuana and the effects it's having on the youth?
Yeah, that was a priority of the previous board, the youth
yeah.
element.
Right.
One of the ways we spend, well, the way we spend our economic development dollars is we don't do it until we don't appropriate those funds until we receive them, because it actually varies on that 1.5
right.
whatever percentage is that's meager from the state on the lottery funds. It changes all the time. And I imagine this revenue would change all the time, and I'd really hate to start hire an officer and then find out
in
a couple
right.
months, well, we don't have that. So
right.
we might want to start.
That was just a general thing.
Oh, no, I think it's a great idea. But
yeah.
whatever program you guys propose,
right.
and I think your LIPSC is LADPC, correct?
LADPC,
is
yeah.
the right group to probably go
yeah.
on this. But that we have a bit of revenue experience before we start saying what it's
right.
going to look like.
Absolutely. Right. We much like the beer and wine tax revenue that comes in, that gets allocated out and recommended as well as part of the prevention and treatment budget.
Well, it has the results, but not the actual wording in the results. So I might.
It's okay. We'll work that out. I know what the parameters are, and they're pretty broad. And it's mm-hmm. LADPC is pretty much where we need to go now. We'll get you the language so you guys can work within that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But
right.
but working with your liaison and LADPC, and then bringing back a recommendation. And Arthur about the expected revenue, and then he needs to figure out how do we appropriate that this year? Do we wait a year? Do we say, well, it's been trending, we take an average, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Working out those details.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That would be my recommendation. So glad you guys want to lean into it. I think that there's definitely a need, and it's great to have that 3%. I appreciate the previous board doing
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
We had the option to referred or not, and they chose two. So at least there's a little bit of revenue we can have discretion over.
So does there have to be a resolution or something that's final, like that?
In order.
An order.
Yeah. Yeah. Just general direction is
to
fine.
To be able to, so it's, well, like the beer and wine tax revenue comes in and then it moves under
statutory.
The prevention.
Yeah.
Allocation or
budget?
Yes, thank you.
Technically, no. I mean,
okay.
We wouldn't need to pass a resolution or anything like that. We could
okay.
just, through the liaison,
mm-hmm.
we would extend an invitation to LADPC to weigh in on appropriating those funds.
So we can just have it as an agenda item.
Exactly.
Okay.
The Board of Commissioners has requested LADPC weigh in on that. That's
okay.
it.
Okay.
Report and recommendation. We get them all the time. That's exactly what we need. Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds really good. That's going to be positive. I know that's a concern. I've got teachers that are friends of mine that are like, this is crazy. We need something. And I think some, not, you know, if you had a really, I really liked George Gasperson. His philosophy on how he dealt with people in the Illinois Valley was just amazing how it turned that community around. And there's been other officers, but he's the one that sticks out in my mind. If you had a person who could go around to the schools in that kind of an attitude and fashion, that would be money well spent.
Yeah, but the city stole them from us.
I know. Yeah.
I've heard a lot of traffic from the valley out there. They've got a serious problem
yeah.
in the school.
No.
Oh, it's yes.
Right. I've had several discussions with the school districts about, okay, what can we do? There's some, yeah, and there are some new curriculum being developed and tested, and so we'll see. Yeah, no, I don't think it's a one-shot thing, or
it'll be an ongoing.
Yeah, variety, multiple.
Well, the kids are exposed to it at home so much now that it, you know, that's the problem. It's legal, you know, mom and dad sit around and do their
culture.
Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. Thank you so much.
Any other questions for me?
No, I think that report was great.
Okay, great. And I would, if you'd like, we can put another, if you want to do this monthly or every 2 months.
One of the things that follows from this is like a regular report to them. That's more so than just this or
right.
our minutes, which nobody really pays attention to or reads, and we're not offended by that at all. But I think we need to put it together in some sort of a codified fashion that
right.
we're diligently.
Almost a press release, so we're
yeah.
satisfied.
And I can write up
that
basically everything that I just talked about.
Yeah,
and get that.
In a fun and exciting way that the
yes.
public is going to go, oh my goodness, I am so glad I did that.
Short and
right.
succinct, the benefits
yes.
of the program being instituted now with the legislature and the additional funding and
right. okay.
leveraging, you know, our tax dollars that are going to Salem, and we are and now being able to appreciate and get them back.
Right.
As before, they were going to other counties. So
yes.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Okay. Great.
Run that through your liaison, and then we'll get it out there.
Okay.
Sounds good. We're going to try to do the same thing with the sheriff and stuff. So,
right. Thank you.
Great. Sean reminded me this morning that we leave at 4:30 a.m. on Sunday morning, or we have to be at the airport by 4:30 a.m. for this conference in Denver.
That's going to be a struggle, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. I think I'm just going to stay up all night, probably. We'll chat.
Okay.
It'll more likely just be
we
a stay
a,
up all night.
We have another quarterly report that Mr. O'Hare, he's coming up, so you can beat him.
Do you want me to
up.
Beat him?
Yep. You're next. That's great.
Thank you for bringing this to our attention. I actually asked our support staff this week. I said, I'd like to see the list of who's when and what do we do when it's missed so that it's not just looking at next week's admin and getting put off or this and that. And I think we can do a better job of being intentional with the quarterly updates.
That's one of those things that's kind of behind the scenes, and I appreciate you kind of bringing it out of the fold. It's somewhat... It's been the chairs kind of facilitating the discretion of, like, Mr. Johnson. Sometimes there's not a lot to report. What I don't actually make an effort to do is that, and I don't have an opportunity to do, of is there something that you guys, even if Ryan doesn't have something, you guys might have had an issue that you wanted to bring mm-hmm. to the attention of the board. And that doesn't have to do, you don't have to wait for a quarterly report. You can do that at any time. I don't wait. You know, just bring it up. But otherwise, if Ryan says, oh, I can't be there, do you want me to reschedule it for the next week? What do you have to talk about, Ryan? No, those aren't issues that are really, we'll just catch you the next time.
Yeah.
So.
All my stuff to me feels like routine, but I know you guys often have questions, so certainly that's
great.
Why I prodded on an update. So I'm not sure how much you guys have paid attention to the budget from Parks, but we're doing great. Our last year closed with an additional $178,000, so that puts us right now with $438,000 carryover into the new budget. So Parks is doing awesome, and with that, I feel very confident with continuing to grow staffing levels, with continuing to just pour back into our parks and improve our facilities. So as fast as the revenue is coming in, we need to be spending it and improving the parks. We have the list I saw before I started was some $10.5 million in deferred maintenance, so we're just going to start chipping away at all that.
Well, even like the stuff that isn't maintenance, buying new
yeah.
mowers or whatever, the ones that they kicked to the curb, were like, really, that's, you fully utilized, fully depreciated those,
yeah, they
those
fully
mowers.
Did.
You couldn't actually recognize them as mowers when they were done.
No, we have quite a few that just need to be surplus, so we're working on that big list so we can do one big motion all at once. But there's several things, like a planer we can buy, so we can really push through picnic park boards instead of doing them all by hand. We should be stripping off the top layer, putting them through an automatic sander, and really streamline the process, knowing that we have more than 600 boards that should be painted every year. It's quite a chore all in itself.
Is there a way to go to a composite rather than a board so you don't have to strip them and sand them every year and paint?
Most likely, but the issue is just that people carve into them or they burn them. It's the vandalism that occurs on the board. If people left them alone, we probably wouldn't have to paint but every 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
But due to people
picking at them. I can certainly look into composite or some other options, but mainly people take their knives.
I'm not in favor personally of composite. I think it's been sold on a thing that was going to do something, and it doesn't have a tendency, when I experience it in places, to really deliver on its, but maybe you've got a different composite that holds up better.
I guess you have to look at the political side of it. We're in timber country, and why are you putting composites down in the park system?
There was a big push for recyclable and composite stuff within the parks industry, and we ordered, back when I worked in Central Point, some of the kiosks, and within 6 months they were bending and warped from the sun. It was really interesting to see that they just didn't always hold up as well. Experienced that with a few things, but we can certainly look around to see what type of wood and improving the wood that we have.
Just a thought.
So you'll soon be seeing additional asked for staff. I'm hoping to add either one or two more assistant rangers out in the field just to help with the routine lower stuff like leaves to allow the rangers to dig into things like electrical and sewer and things that need to be replaced on the top level. I'm also starting right now to look into a reservation management system so that I can start planning for what the future looks like with bringing our reservations back in-house. We've had a very significant increase in complaints from Reserve America, and they switched in the last year call centers, and since then their customer service and their knowledge has dropped, and the customers are not happy with getting information through them. So it's just another reassurance that I do need to bring them back in-house. Jackson County has one full-time person that has done all the reservations for the past 16 years, and they bring in a seasonal person to just help with the extra call load, so I feel confident we can make that happen here as well. Just have to continue to look at office space. We did just do an expansion within parks. You're more than welcome to drop by anytime. My old office was turned into a supply room, so we now have all the supplies in one area instead of picking throughout the entire building. The rangers moved into a new office, and that's now a conference room, so we can all sit down and have a meeting together. And then I moved my office away from the front counter so that people don't stick their head in my office every 30 seconds, and I can do my job without those interruptions. So it was a good move. Our notice of violation process is extremely successful. That is for the citations. This year alone, we've written more than 500 notice of violations. I think the current count is 511. That's up from 337 last year. Now, of those, only 8 people ended up going to court so far this year, so it's a very minimal amount. 181 of those were voided, turned into 322 additional annual days passes. So it's a program where we are forcing people to pay for the services they use. By doing that, there's a lot of talk out in the field, and we are starting to write less over the last couple of months because people are paying their $5 at the box. So I think that's reflecting in the revenues as well. I know along with the expansion we just did, facility maintenance is looking into fixing the roofs in our back two buildings. We have two buildings right now which are pretty much unusable. The roofs have been collapsing. Mainly, we believe that the rubber seals on the screws from the metal roof were not replaced, and with that, we have some water leaks and then just a continual caving in of roofs. So after that's completed, we'll be able to move our metals and wood shop out away from the rest of our activities and just continue to improve efficiency with parks itself. The Lake Selmec Bridge construction is underway, as you know. That has segregated our lake in half and has had that east side drastically drop with use reservations. A lot of confusion still from the public as to how to access each side. But that's okay because we're on our downhill slope. Labor Day is kind of the last big peak for parks, and then we get into the shoulder season and start dealing with a lot of leaves. We were going to bring in a fire camp just last week, but unfortunately that got canceled. First Public Works was really concerned about the amount of traffic on the road, and then it was realized that there's a new load limit on Deer Creek, and so the large rigs couldn't even access that side of the lake. So
the detour caused the camp to have to be relocated.
That's correct, yeah.
So the normal road could handle it, but the detour...
Well, that's where my confusion was, because I was told when I took this position that if you have a fire camp, do not let them use Lakeshore. They are supposed to be using Deer Creek, and the Lakeshore load limit wouldn't allow it. And so I felt pretty confident signing the contract and not really giving them much warning to make sure you get all your permits first, because they should have been able to use Deer Creek. But what I got from Public Works is within the last month or two, while they started the bridge project over Lakeshore, they then came in and deemed a new load limit on Deer Creek pushing it down to, I think, 26
See, that information wasn't presented when they agreed, when we agreed as a board to not have a temporary one half of the bridge on Lakeshore open. And that really bothers me.
I was
that's
frustrated.
Revenue at $2,000 a day
yes.
that you are not appreciating, and frankly, yeah. as a result of bad information from Public Works, or not the complete story. And so,
well, and why was that stuff not presented to us as far as a report to that extreme when we were given all the reports on the closures of Lakeshore? Yeah. This is a big impact on our community.
Absolutely.
And with the fires, here we have an ability to be a part of a solution with helping getting things out. And it is frustrating. You should have had the go-ahead. It should not have been a change of a bridge load to affecting your detour without your notification, and that is an issue.
I wasn't too happy about it, but I realize it is what it is, and they did figure out another solution.
Yeah, do you know where the other solution was? And I'd like to know the duration of time that they used that other one. If you could find that
sure.
one out, there might be an assignment of cost. So. I think Commissioner DeYoung, you wouldn't mind following up on that. Because I remember when that conversation about that, is there anything that we need to know about this issue of having an alternate for that amount of time during our peak recreational season?
We should have known the full picture, and that was, well, if we do this, we're not going to be able to do that.
And if there wasn't a full evaluation of that Deer Creek Bridge, assigning that as the only alternate route for emergency, that was the big other consideration. So we're having a fire camp with emergency vehicles, and you're telling us now that emergency vehicles can't use that alternate route? That's the exact crux of what the concern was from the Ivy Fire and other emergency service providers. That's not okay.
Yeah. Honestly, the conversation started about 2 hours before I was notified of the bridge limit, with an email stating that if traffic increased too much on Deer Creek, that they would ask, that Public Works would ask me to shut down fire camp due to the amount of traffic. And I said, that's just part of having only one road. And then that came about. So I will be happy to pass that information
Please.
On. Absolutely.
If yeah, something now the question like this is, in the future, the liaisons need to be brought up to speed before Public Works making unilateral decisions to limit what the board has already approved as the alternate route without conditions.
Yeah.
That's my concern.
Green. I'm just thinking, hopefully the emergency trucks can get in if there is a fire back there and they don't have issues.
Well, it has been used as a fire camp for decades.
Yeah.
And it's really this, I was very not pleased with this.
Well, I appreciate you hearing it. Other parks, Indian Prairie, we have two more showers to get tiled, and then we're going to hopefully be moving into the bathrooms with showers, going to Griffin. So just facilities are continued to be improved, and the campers using our parks are ecstatic to be seeing those improvements come. One of the questions I have, and you all might be able to help out with this, I'm curious, our park property lines go up to the actual road. Now, I understand there is a public right-of-way between the road and our property, but my understanding, it's still our property. So on that note, if somebody is parking on the roadside, which is technically our property, even though it is on the side of the road, is that something where we can charge a $5 fee for? What I'm thinking about is at Chinook, there we often have full capacity in our inside the parking lot. You also have some people parking outside purposely to evade the fees. But I don't necessarily... Yes, and I don't necessarily want to put up no parking zone in front of Chinook, because when the parking lot is full, those people won't have anywhere else to park. But my idea was, if it's allowed, to put up the $5 signs also along the portion of the park that's ours, right, on the side of the road, instead of doing a no parking zone.
That'll be a longer conversation, because I can see in the Chinook area, there's people who host little events or gatherings or whatever. I can't have... and they don't use the park, I can't have somebody parking in a public thoroughfare going to Mr. Bloom's home on the edge there, never going into the park. He doesn't need to pay a $5 park fee, so that's going to be the challenge in that situation.
Sure.
But like at Innis Riffle, say for instance, there's no other alternative to what you would be doing other than accessing the river through our park, and you're evading, there's plenty of parking down there.
Yeah.
There's no question in that mind that you should be able to assign something like that.
Would you have to designate it as overflow parking or something so they know that?
Well, we did actually explore the option of a parks zone, and I don't know exactly where that went. I need a refresher and stuff. Yeah. Maybe we should put this as an opportunity. That's something we need to talk about and work out as a proposed
sure.
solution in these four park situations.
In and of itself, I don't necessarily support us charging people on the public right-of-way of parking.
It's going to be challenging.
Yeah.
Okay. One of my issues with the no parking zone is there's absolutely no authority, and I nor my staff have permission to write citations. The police aren't writing citations, so essentially we might as well chop those signs down unless I can be given permission to write citations for the
yeah,
no parking zones.
So. It's in your, you know, that the no parking zone is expanding the parks zone. Let's talk about this
okay.
at another time.
Perfect. Will do.
Great topic, though. Definitely want to lean into it.
Sure. Those are my major points, stuff that we're battling. Do you have questions about parks I might be able to answer?
I have a list.
Yeah.
Is there any way you can have an estimate as to what this smoke has caused? Has it cost you anything in the parks department?
Oh, yeah, sure.
People in cancellations and whatnot?
I can get the list of it.
There's a groundswell coming as to, they could have put that fire out and they didn't type of a thing.
Yeah.
And I think we need to have some documentation as to how that affected each and every entity in Josephine County.
Okay. Yes, I can get a documentation for cancellations. We
you
do
know,
lose the revenue.
Hellgate Excursion, for instance, we had a large group going down there, and they had canceled it.
Yeah.
So that's got an effect on you know, the private sector, but it certainly has an effect on us, I'm going to assume.
We have calls daily asking what the smoke condition is, and they're inquiring about canceling.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
I want to thank you. Your staff was very helpful. I've had a lot of deaths in my family in the last year, and four since January. So it got me looking at genealogy and history, and I had all my nieces and nephews in June and July, and we took them up to the cemetery to show them their great-great-grandparents and all that kind of stuff. So your staff was very, very helpful in helping me track down stuff that I needed for the process.
Great.
And I want to thank you for their assistance in that. And I do have a question. With all the revenues coming in, I
mm-hmm.
know that Community Corrections was supplementing some of the lost revenues from Title III dollars for parks maintenance and stuff like that. Has, with the revenues increasing, has any of that been offset or looked at with the Community Corrections work crews? I'm just not curious. I just don't know what the status is of all that.
Yeah, you could probably
provide it. We haven't looked at that. What it seems that we're doing now is we are paying $400 per crew that come out to our parks, and of course those vary. They do the most of the time do a great job, get a lot done. Really just depends on the group of guys that come out, the leader, all that stuff. Right now we are receiving bills and paying those. It's my understanding that we're supposed to have a transfer in to help cover those. Now, and this is what I thought would happen is because we now have revenues coming in, everyone gets big eyes and, hey, should we be spending this on the correction crews? But my answer is we have so much deferred maintenance, stuff that is crumbling, stuff that's broken, that if I don't spend my money there, then we won't have a park system in 10 or 15 years. I was opting, and I did voice my opinion, that I would have rather canceled all the corrections crews altogether so that I could save that money and use it for depreciated things. I can tell the public that, you know, blackberries aren't being cut back for the next 2 years, or, you know, the leaves are just going to stay and decompose in some sections, because the money has to be used in other places. I was really conservative this last year with not spending too much. I certainly did not want to go in the red by overspending. I projected revenues would be high, but I wanted those to carry over to this next year to reassure that I wasn't making two additional hires and then having to fire them,
mm-hmm.
anything like that. So it's certainly a conversation we can reopen.
Let them go.
Yeah.
let's set up a time next week. So you've got some capital designated dollars from the property sales.
Yes.
And so I don't want just my personal perspective on how we allocate the revenues that you acquire. The revenues that you get from people who are using it really, in my opinion, should be dedicated towards operations as much as possible.
Yes.
The revenues that you get from these other ones that are dedicated funds for capital improvements, we focus on doing that with those dollars. So we just kind of separate and see how we can, you know, allocate those different funding pools.
Okay.
We'll work it out. I'd happy to sit down with you and Arthur.
Okay.
And then we'll bring something back to the board
Perfect.
As a package deal with the two people, and this is what we're planning on doing with your long list of deferred maintenance.
Sure.
I'd like a long-term strategy.
Okay.
Of how we're going to address those things. Because I think we've still got properties in the queue for a little while that are going to be an additional revenue stream for those things. And you can't use that money for anything else but capital. So
yeah.
And deferred maintenance falls into that. So.
And a good chunk of that, we're definitely wanting to focus on the White Horse project to get that park back up to speed.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Awesome. I had one more. At some point, I think we as a county need to look at, and this currently falls under facilities, but it kind of fell under my conversation looking at is radios and which agencies within the county are on which radio frequency. As a former dispatcher, as someone who's been in the field using them for many, many years, it's something that I could teach anyone in the county about radios and have the conversations and the maintenance and all that fun stuff. But when we were looking at moving our animal control officers, that's going to be moving them from frequency to a different frequency. And I think we need to have an updated conversation about radios in our county. Mm-hmm. I know as a PO, I was always frustrated having to wait for parks to tell me that they needed toilet paper, trash emptied in Osprey Loop. And here I got somebody who's got warrants and I can't get through on the radio. Mm-hmm. And so I think it would be wise, since you're one of the departments involved, but it would be wise to have a radio conversation. And
can you head that up?
I would be happy to,
awesome.
But yeah. It's facilities. So it'd be, okay.
It's a hybrid between facilities, communications and IT. And I think, but the users are what I would really see as the driver on that one. So you have my endorsement to, it's been something I know nothing about.
Okay.
I mean, we have walkie-talkies at the ranch. That's it.
Yeah.
So go get them, Tiger.
Okay. I just thought I'd bring it up just because often we were always on the same frequency. And I'm like, and I tease because I bring up Osprey every time.
That's where you talk.
You would be really happy to know, and about a year and a half ago, we switched so that all of our fleet is on GPS. So with that, we eliminated the need for every single time a park's employee switches locations. We don't use the radio. We might use the radio about four times a week now.
Okay.
So you've,
very
you've
little.
Got them tracked all the time?
Absolutely. I have speed limit and location.
Sure helped, didn't it?
It has, yeah. It's great for their safety as well as ours, mitigating complaints.
Be able to get safe. Yeah. They have an emergency at home. You got to know where that guy is.
Yeah. Well, and staff time. We spent a part-time office person just tracking where people were all day long. Now it's just all automated, and I can download the report. So it's
very cool.
A huge help.
Well, it's still one of those things.
Absolutely.
That I want to make sure we're as efficient and where we're at with it. And as people are moving, do we have the best plan in place? So
yeah, I believe we're on two frequencies right now. So certainly a conversation with them that we can
have. Cool. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you,
Sarah. Commissioners.
Thank you. Now, before you go, one of the longer-term things that has to do with what your budget looks like and how you're allocating funds, White Horse is definitely a priority.
Yes.
But also, you're not going to be in that facility forever.
Yes.
In your tenure, you're probably going to be in a different one.
Okay.
And it's going to be cool. It's going to be rustic. That's the vision I have. It's like it's a cool parks building. And you're probably still co-located with forestry, but it shouldn't be a shed. It shouldn't be a hole in the wall. It should be something cool, you know, that expresses the vision
parks
that we
is
have.
A business.
Yeah.
We are. Yeah.
Your business. You're bringing money in.
Oh, yeah. So we'll look at that as a long-term capital project. But you're sitting on prime real estate that should
don't
not be.
Don't pick your grapes out yet.
No, I won't.
No. It's probably 5 years, but we need to be thinking about it today. And like the 4-H district, they've been putting away $10,000, for decades. We just signed the second decade of an agreement for that intent for the building fund. So that's something we need to do tomorrow.
All right. We can start looking.
Cool.
Thank you,
Sarah. Next on the agenda is our esteemed finance director, Mr. O'Hare. Riveting presentations every week. Stay tuned.
No doubt.
Get out the popcorn.
Even more exciting than normal. So,
does anybody have a schedule that we need to be aware of?
No, I cleared my calendar because we said this was going till noon today.
Limit
has
my
a
chat.
Tendency to do so.
I just have to call Charlene Witcher before post time. It's probably already too late. I imagine that letter's gone through. It's going to be a priority to go in today's papers.
We'll see. We'll see. Don't despair.
So just some follow-up.
Bless you.
county can spend the revenue, marijuana revenue, only on public health, education, and treatment-related marijuana, marijuana products, and public safety. So there's that little tag there, and public safety. And given $40,000, my 2 cents worth, if we could combine that with tobacco coordination at the schools, I mean, if we get $80,000 a year, that's, and you split it up too many ways, nobody can do anything with it. So if you can focus it in and get some leverage with the tobacco coordinator, you might. But that's up to you whatever you think.
It's not just tobacco. She already gets money for prevention for these other things. And
for
so,
the schools.
And with the impact in our schools. She's also, with those surveys you mentioned yesterday with the 8th grade and 11th grade, we're seeing an uptick in the 11th grade usage of marijuana. 8th grade, not yet, but the 11th grade has definitely gone up. The other pieces, I know we tried to do that, not we, the school district tried to do that 5 cent sheriff's school thing. The city was able to implement it without having a levy to do it, and they just put it in place, and it's been very helpful to have their school marshals. And Three Rivers, they didn't do it, but literally the amount of marijuana they confiscate and they turn over actually is to the level of like high crime at this point. They have safes full of stuff they confiscate from the kids, and I really like that they're looking at how can we do something that's more effective than trying to, you know, capture. Alcohol still is our number one use, so that's something to realize as well. It's been legal a long time. But I agree that LADBC is still the right thing, and realize there's law enforcement members on LADBC as well.
Is there a school person as well?
Yep. Good. So you have Three Rivers and Grants Pass Police all on LADBC.
But you also have two revenue streams, one of the 3%, which is what LADPC, and then the 17%, and we haven't seen any money yet from the state on that 17. Supposedly, we're going to get it at any time, you know, just momentarily.
Ron Bette made a presentation at the AOC review, and he said middle to the end of September, I think, is what he said, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
My thought is that may not be very. I don't want to get off on a tangent, but when you put OHA program into OLCC, they have another excuse to say, we have an expanded program and it's going to take us another year or two of revenues. We don't have
to
any
cover
share.
Our costs.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And then just again on the juvenile, where we were talking about the org chart and distinguishing between the different things, to my mind, that would be a perfect opportunity for a public information officer or someone with expertise in commercial presentations, putting things together, to work with Jim and or Sean or whoever to put something together that would be, you know, put it out on Facebook, do the little video show, you know, TED Talk type approach to things. But again, that's just that was just a thought, as a passing thought. So what I have is two things. First, the DMIC, I think, I'm not sure if I update everybody, but they did do the excavation. They put a plastic liner in there, refilled the hole. We're waiting now for the results of the testing. So that takes usually a couple of weeks, so hopefully within another week or so, we'll have the results of that, of this second round of testing that they did. And when we get that back, if shows problems, then we'll have to address those. If it shows everything was probably captured and successfully removed, then. But I also have to have my placeholder in with Business Oregon for more grant money should the excavations show that there's additional contamination.
So since plastic never breaks down, are we going to have some plastic mitigation in the future we have to deal with now because of the liner? Or?
That liner could be there. I don't know. That's an interesting thought. Plastic mitigation.
My thinking of that is it was a big thing for SOS is one of those fairs, you know, they put all their recycled stuff and it was all over the radio of you know, no plastic bags
to
recycle and doesn't break down ever.
Ever. I don't know. Don't they wrap those burritos, that contaminated soil in something and then deliver it to...
It's almost like a rubber kind of bag.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
So the second thing I have is the this morning I did get the payoff request for Hugo Hills. So this has been the project that's been going on since last October, when Oregon Housing contacted us and said that they wanted to refinance the existing elderly bond issue that they had done to that we originally fixed up Hugo Hills with. That was the money we used to fix up Hugo Hills. So, and that seemed fortuitous because at that same time, Carla McCafferty was looking at closing Hugo Hills. So, anyway, we have the payoff amount, $139,000, and with the board's permission, I will go ahead and process that, taking it out of the property reserves. Theoretically, depending on what we do with Hugo Hills, then either the rental or the sale can come back. And
there's no other place to get the money from.
There's no other place at this point. And there are adequate reserves. We should have, even after this current budget year, the general piece of the reserves that facilities uses, and the other ones should be around $600,000, even at the end of this year. So it's $140,000. And with your permission, I will go ahead and get that processed, and then Hugo Hills will be all ours.
Free and clear.
Those were the two main things. I'm working forward on biweekly payroll and several other projects, but those were the two things I wanted to bring to the board.
We had a discussion yesterday about the library trusts.
Yes.
And who those go through. We just need to make sure that, I think Commissioner DeYoung's the liaison, that we're moving this as kind of like a package deal. I think that was Pat's request, and I kind of agree that it should be, you know, the orders and everything just, and really the intent of the board, I think, is to kind of divest ourselves. We've got a habit of this, of properties and liability and stuff. It's just financial elements that are just sitting out there. Mike Watson's got a piece of that in that Rogue Valley. So that's something I think we'd like to have diligently move forward and to conclusion by the end of the year.
Yeah.
Would be really great. So,
well, I do keep in touch with legal folks about the library.
Okay.
So
great. Just wanted to make sure you were on the loop on that. I have nothing for you. If you guys have anything? Okay. Commissioner Morgan.
I would like to bring up the... Oh, not for you. Never mind. I'm waiting for other items from commissioners.
Yeah, he was like, what?
You did give me an update yesterday afternoon. Have you given that update to the other commissioners?
No.
Okay. I don't know when the right timing for that is.
Yeah. So...
Don't tease us. Now it's
no, that was
a lot.
Nope.
I think it should come
Can't
from the source.
Anything. Nope.
I think, okay.
Jeez.
New update in the wrinkle with the animal control officers, and it was a very positive update.
Yeah,
and actually exciting. I was in shock, almost fell over, and didn't know what to do. So, but we just want to make sure that we follow up and get it from the source.
Yeah.
So.
And I'll meet with everybody involved to chat. Individually, but let the sheriff do his own talking, I think.
Okay. And the other piece of that is I recommended that even though it's animal shelter funding with you as the liaison to finance, I recommended that Arthur talk with you. And part is because you know the history of the funding over there with the last levy and this and that, just as far as what is available, and because the facilities is a portion that they were kind of looking at. So I asked Arthur to check with you before he gives some information to the sheriff about funding availability and such.
That sounds really great. I like that idea.
Okay. Yeah.
But I have had a snippet of a conversation with the sheriff that we're here to help in any way we can to make it work.
Yeah. And the reality is he's just doing an incredible job. And how do we make sure that we're supporting him in that process? And
cool.
He doesn't get that feeling.
Well, you would be surprised by the conversation that Arthur told me he had with him. So
I haven't had a conversation with Arthur. So I don't know what that conversation is.
And it's not for me to say, because it wasn't my conversation. So
we'll get there all in due time, and patience is a virtue that we all have to work on. Thank you so much, Mr.
Thank
O'Hare.
You.
So we are now at the point on our agenda of item number five, other items that should come before the board. Anything that matters to you? Commissioner Morgan?
I do have some things. The Cannabis Advisory Committee, we had left it with some recommendations. You were, Commissioner DeYoung, you were going to let us know if you had any opinions on those recommendations.
Nope.
But I did have an update that I'd like to change one of my recommendations. Catherine Lansbury was the environmental consultant that sat here a couple days ago with the presentations we got, and she submitted an application that I received by email last night. I forwarded to you guys as an FYI. I believe that the information she provided would absolutely be beneficial to the team, and so I would like to make a recommendation of her being one of the nine that we select. I had given her feedback that if there's openings down the road, you know, appointments could be made later, but I think that she actually bumps up higher on the list than some of the others that we recommended. And I quite honestly, I don't remember who all was on your list, Commissioner Hare, as far as going over that again. So,
is there any reason why she can't be just added? Does it have to be nine?
The order established says nine.
Nine, okay.
We could change the order. It's at our discretion. I think there's wiggle room with people who were in the margin. I don't know who that would be, but I think that there probably were a couple that were.
The other piece I want to let you guys know is that we're looking for a first meeting of September 26th. Rob Bovette is available that night.
Oh.
He gave me four dates he was available. The first one I thought was too soon, as it's the end of next week, or the 8th. It's just not quite time to get people notified. It's a Friday. The 8th or the 26th were the two options that I'm in town for. The other one was while Commissioner DeYoung and I are at our final county college.
Yep,
and
yep.
So, and I provided the dates to Sean Martinez, and the 26th was the one that she was available of the four. So if
I think that's polite to give people a month of time.
Okay. Just on this first one, as we're establishing it?
Yeah, I'd like to do it on the 8th, but 26 sounds fine.
I like the idea of going sooner. I didn't know if I can get people to actually attend on a Friday with less than 2 weeks' notice.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Okay, so anyhow, I didn't know if...
to get the committee done, if you... I know there's a lot of scratching.
Which ones are yours? The checks
and highlights
stars?
Are really important. Stars okay. Are probably people I already knew. And check marks, I think, were your recommendations.
Got it.
If we can have that finalized for the weekly business session to be approved next week, I think you can start your publication and invite them. I think you also need to send a letter out to everybody who applied, who wasn't selected, to let them know about the date. They obviously have an interest in the subject and should be invited to participate, if not on the committee, just as a citizen. They all have issues that they want to raise.
It'd be nice if they all heard what Rob had to say.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Robat.
That'd be really great.
I also reached out to Community Corrections to see if we can utilize Marine Hill Conference Room. They have training in there during the day, but I believe if we focus on an evening meeting, that it would still be able to be possible.
I'm still hesitant about the capacity issue. So,
do we need to look at the fairgrounds?
I'll just raise that as you're going to probably have a lot of people there.
Okay. The thing I like about Marine Hill is it does have AV available. With county networking already established, I think it has a greater capacity than and Basker.
Theirs is like 120 on a good day, everybody sitting around or whatever. So whatever that is. You work it out. That's a concern
okay.
of mine, that we're planning appropriately for the type of... I mean, that's the largest response for people who are interested in being on the committee I've ever seen. So... other than being a commissioner, we had 41 applicants the first time for Commissioner Ellis, and then 44 applicants for Commissioner Casinelli's replacement. So
of the names you have highlighted are Becker, Fashing, Fitzgerald, Gendron. Do you want full names or last names? I'm sorry.
I understand who they are.
Okay, so, but I don't know. We hadn't got your feedback. So, Steve Becker, Don Fashing, Gerard Fitzgerald, Peter Gendron, Cedar Gray, Valerie Montague, Jared Panks, Renee Pear, and Jeff Thomas. That is nine.
Oh.
So the question would be, who would this person be? If, I mean, everybody can attend, yes, but do we have the top nine that we think would be the best representation?
Do you have an alternate position that you could put that person in because they could attend every meeting and stay abreast of it in case somebody isn't there?
We do have an alternate on our planning commission. It makes sense. It's not in the order, but we can pass an order at the same time we pass the order to approve those, providing for an alternate position. Maybe you have two. That was a large-sized.
Did you have any of the list? Did you have a chance to go through and look and have any recommendations of any changes?
No, I know most of them, and they did. I don't know Donald Fashing. I don't know if he would recommend someone. The same thing with Becker, the most of them. But I don't have any. I don't have any. Well, let's take this one out, put that one in.
Yeah.
Because I haven't really read that one. I got that one this morning before I got here. Plus, I got another couple things that were on my plate this morning right off the bat that aren't taken care of right now. So it's going to be an issue, really big issue for me in the next couple of days. But I haven't read that, no. So
okay.
When you bring that here, I'm, you know, don't look to me and say, what do you want? Who do you want to go to put that one in?
I have no history with this individual other than what we saw in the meeting was something that I thought was
positive
and beneficial as far as moving forward would be beneficial.
Do you feel comfortable, Commissioner Morgan, if you take what we have as our recommendations already and you figure out the last little pieces to put together by the end of day so that we can move this item forward to the weekly business session?
Okay, so if it comes in an order of an amendment or anything
else? Just get the list and
okay. We'll
get the...
Sounds good.
And you have my endorsement. If you need an additional person as an alternate, we'll get legal. Our office will draft the order to amend the creation of that committee to provide for an alternate.
Okay.
So you've got that if you need it. Anything else?
Do you guys have a preference on one or two alternates?
Doesn't matter to me. No more than two.
See which replicas are. If you get another one that's really good, another alternate sitting in the room doesn't bother me a bit.
Nope.
There'll always be public meetings. My concern is always being mindful of even numbers versus odd numbers for votes and stuff like that.
And that's why the committee is nine.
Yeah. And so if one alternate, their alternate's not a voting member, but it is still one of those things.
Committee's nine, so it doesn't change that.
Okay.
You're good. Okay, anything else?
That was the main thing that I wanted to make sure I brought up, is letting you know that Rob Bovette was very excited about helping and wanted to be in person. And so he will be at our first meeting and go from there. So.
I feel there's a need for Commissioner DeYoung to be somewhere, so I'm going to move forward as fast as possible through the items that I have. I have six. And so we've got a potential press release that's going to follow up a discussion that we had, a continued item from our Wednesday meeting yesterday, an executive session on the property located at 102 South Redwood Highway. We have an offer from a community partner, really, the Ivy Senior Center, in purchasing the Illinois Valley county building. Their offer is $340,000 in cash. It also provides for us to lease back an opportunity to have our radio tower, all of that. The tenants in the facility currently are going to be provided for certainly a 60-day notice from the county as in their lease agreement, but perhaps the opportunity to lease from the new owners, which will be the senior center, and for however long and what rates they can work out. I've got a press release here following this action.
One of the items I noticed, the phone number at the very end.
Yeah, it's wrong. It's actually, I'm not going to be the person to contact it. It's going to be Mr. Watson on the draft. But,
5220.
Okay.
I just noticed it was, Wally's phone number, but with your name.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, it's short and sweet. This is the version of the press release. Well, you guys are anything to add, that's what I would, or subtract something we shouldn't say. I think what we're looking to try to do is really emphasize how this is going to be, it's really a strategic decision by the county and not in any way looking at the Illinois Valley specific. We're divesting ourselves of properties all over the place. We probably sold in the last 2 years in excess of 50 properties that we were retaining and had liability. Now those revenues can be reinvested in forestry. That talks about the two priorities that I think we discuss of internet improvement in the Illinois Valley and the IV airport, employment lands.
Employment property and industrial park improvement.
Yeah.
Internet service.
The wording of this last sentence is odd.
They're probably all odd.
And some things are capitalized that, like the word improve, probably should not be capitalized.
Okay. Yeah.
So priorities are IV airport employment property at the industrial park, comma, and internet service and emergency communication in the valley. Would
okay.
maybe be...
Go ahead.
Would that be okay?
Yeah. Does it read well?
So we need a motion to approve and accept the offer by the IV Senior Center and issue them like a letter of intent to proceed for the sale?
That's correct. I will contact the individual that I've been negotiating with for the sale, notify him that we will be putting together the documents necessary.
The purchase package.
Exactly.
Okay. That's the motion that I think we need to hear today is approval and accepting of the offer from the IV Senior Center to purchase
the
building.
Report and recommendation was corrected from yesterday. We had two outstanding points that I finished negotiating with him yesterday afternoon.
Excellent.
That was the 6-month timeline in order for us to install our own electric meter to maintain that electrical equipment and radio tower, as well as a maximum 6-month period for us as a county to find a new location for public health to move that WIC once a month meeting.
So we just really need to approve the report and recommendation.
So it says to provide WIC services. It's WIC services and clinical. Does that matter, that detail? Because
it should just say public health services.
Okay.
It should be comprehensive. I don't want to speculate.
If we just say WIC, it's more than WIC, and
yeah.
That's the problem.
Okay.
Is it was the other stuff that was there that can't necessarily be moved as
right.
quickly as the WIC.
Okay. So with public health as the substitute, entertain a motion to approve the report and recommendation.
I'm just giving them time to read. I want to.
Okay.
What did you say?
Just a motion to approve the report and recommendation, which gives authority to the property manager to negotiate the sale agreement, put the bid package, all the property purchase package together, and facilitate the sale to the IV Senior Center for that amount of $340,000.
I'll make a motion to approve the report and recommendation with recommended amendments to approve the sale to the Illinois Valley Senior Center with the items listed and for the press release to go out after Commissioner Harris's amendments.
Second.
Any further discussion?
If it needed to, it can encompass anything else. You said a lot, but I wasn't sure if that all.
So during your lengthy motion, which is shorter than my lengthy motion, so that's really good that you made progress. This is a decision that frankly needs to be made at a weekly business session. So
Okay. We're
technically just looking to engage in the sale process.
That's right. You're authorizing me to go forth, get the documents put together,
yep.
and get the ball moving,
right.
and collect a deposit.
It needs to be in there.
Yep.
Okay, so I amend my motion to simply be to allow you to move forward.
Good.
All right.
I think you were good. So I just want to make sure that we're not giving the impression like the deed is done, the sale is done. It's really
correct.
Just starting the process. So, okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 3-0.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you. For you, Commissioner DeYoung, working on a jurisdictional exchange with Lower River Road on ODOT, there's a potential project out in that area that makes a lot of sense if we were with the transportation package. I would love to be at the first of the line who's proposing jurisdictional exchanges with the best, most amount of money to negotiate on that. Just a thought. The Ambassador Break area, I just throwing that out there again, not something that I'm looking
for. On that.
We did
Commissioner
the
Morgan had a really good idea that where the table set out there is all on one slab. So possibility, I'll check with Ryan when he gets back to see if we can take those slabs up and move those card tables over to the other side.
Okay.
So you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Talk to one of the people that use that out there every once in a while. I think she was from the city of Grants Pass and bounced that off her yesterday, and she said, wow, what a great idea. That should be able to be done. Because they really like the card table.
I'd lift it, but I just figure I should let somebody else. And
I was thinking we need to finalize the public health deputy director interview and get those things in the queue. So as liaison, are you...
Well, I have a question for you on that.
Generally, my four...
Yes, I gave my four, and I checked with HR last night. Well, the question, generally speaking, the commissioners don't pick a deputy director.
Right.
And so...
Well, usually there's a director.
True, but we have an interim director in place. It is interim, but one thing HR was... I stopped in and spoke with Carlton last night. JJ's out this week. Mm-hmm. Just the status. But we, you know... One of the recommendations they thought about is what if we created a first round interview process?
Totally endorse. We had that conversation too.
If
you don't have an objection, we should do final round interviews, but your preliminary, broad stroke.
I would leave that list
that we submitted with people you would like to interview.
It was, but I think it was the intent of public. Of HR at that point, I understood that we were going to do those interviews. And I think you can press, you can select a, take all those people that somebody found an interest to, do a preliminary interview at your level with our interim director, with the HR manager, whatever team you look to put together, Commissioner Morgan, as liaison, and then bring a report and recommendation for three candidates that the board would sit down and interview. That was what I understood HR was proposing.
So, yeah, we've thought about at the liaison level with interim director with HR, but then I also would be looking at potentially a health person in the community, the public health related, and also maybe OHA member, maybe. But the idea being that generally deputy directors don't go through the full board.
Yeah.
It is a unique circumstance, and...
I'm not prepared to delegate the full hiring.
No, just the first round.
First round sounds excellent.
Recommendations at the end of it to the board for the final one, so you guys don't have to sit through all of them, unless you would like to.
No, I would not.
So we have an emergency services person who's also looking to be. We were supposed to have a draft IGA to approve today. It's not complicated. It basically mirrors other IGAs that we have with the current one we have with Jackson County, implementing that with the city. I need to fill in. They've got their list. Their list is very minimal in scope. It sounds very reasonable, but you guys need to see that. My challenge is that we need to get this moving. Worst case scenario is the fact that we do a letter of intent, and the long scope could be 60 days before this person actually takes place here, because we have to get the IGA signed and all of that stuff. If we have parallel tracks moving forward on this, I think we can get it done in 30 days, because she may have to give 30 days notice at the peak fire season to not leave Jackson County in the lurch. I don't want to have to wait 30, 60 days. So I don't know what I'm looking for from the board, but just I wish that we've got HR people out. We've got people that I needed to have do some stuff that aren't here to facilitate the IGA before the board today. I don't have it. Or the package of approval. It's close to what she was looking to do, and HR has endorsed the level and all of that stuff, but I don't have it for you.
I guess for me, we tentatively approved the IGA going to the city with the first draft of it. We haven't seen anything since then, so... Yeah.
I'll get you a copy today. It's done. I just don't have it here.
We're on this track. I like the idea that we're working within our county to provide for the needs in our county. I know that down the road there may be looking at regional things, but I still like the prioritization of our county. That's my scope of responsibility. And so I would, since we saw the first draft and the city has a mother, I'd be willing to say we can move it to the weekly business session if we can get copies today. And if we need to make any recommendation changes, we could do that.
That would be great. So first round done. I'd also like the ability to do a letter of intent to hire so that she can provide her notice at earliest possible time frame. The constraints for me that I think we were discussing were budgetary. This solves those budgetary constraints, so we're within them. That offer could be contingent on approval of the IGA with the city.
With the city.
But at least it gives her something that she can go to her supervisor and say,
I think we've kind of kept this up in the air for long enough.
Okay.
Just going to get it done.
But that sounds
involved
good.
And needs to have an answer.
That sounds okay with you, Commissioner Morgan. We'll draft a letter of intent to hire.
Okay.
And we'll have a draft of that for you guys to review.
I'm okay with that.
Okay. I apologize that I don't have that totally done. A lot of stuff going on. So I think that's it.
Well, it was June 19th, I think, that we chose this route. And so it's, you know, it's only taken 2 months to...
Lots going on. Okay, nothing further. The board is adjourned at 11:34.